Hey, home theater nerds. Thanks for pushing play on the Bright Side Home Theater Podcast. The podcast that's all about the sights, the sounds, the scenes, fun that we have in our theaters. This week's fun, Under Siege, 1080p Blu-ray. How does it stack up? We'll find out. To help us find out, I brought in Todd Anderson from AV Nirvana, and we break this down and we have a blast. If you guys like what you see, hit subscribe on YouTube. Follow me on iTunes. You can email me at brightsidehometheater@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter at brightsidehT. Let's head into the theater and break this down.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Under Siege from 1992 with Todd Anderson.
How's it going?
I wasn't sure which way I should go. Todd Anderson and Under Siege or whatever. But how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How were the holidays for you?
They were good. Good. You know, with COVID, it got a little weird for sure.
I got it.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. I mean, so many people have.
Yeah, we had it run like literally right through from a Christmas party.
Yep.
Right through my family. My immediate family in my house, but it was with my family, my family. We all got together on Monday after Christmas, and by Tuesday I was sick. I wasn't bad, but Wednesday right off the cliff. I got it bad. Yeah. Wow. No, it was bad. It was 3-4 days and then I was like, "Okay," and you just But my whole family, all different variable symptoms and all different versions of it. Mm-hmm. Some people didn't get it, and some people, it was crazy.
It's so weird. I thought we were going to get it. I mean, we had a kid coming home from college up your way, and my other daughter's a senior in high school, and people were dropping like flies there, and a whole bunch of buddies of mine in the neighborhood, their families were getting it. So we were just kind of waiting for it to happen. It just never happened. So, I mean.
Yeah, I know. My wife never got it in the house. Like, I went after, 3 or 4 days of having it. I finally went and got tested. And they were like, "Yep, you have it." And the lady, the doctor, she's like, well, she goes through the whole process that you have to go through for quarantine and, get your own room. Have your own room if you can have your own bathroom. Start wiping stuff off if you have to leave the room, but separate yourself from other people.
Wow.
And then in the middle of it, she goes, "But you've been in the house for 3 or 4 days already, so it is what it is."
Yeah, and it's the holidays. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was tough.
You know, when if you got elderly folks involved or anybody that has any kind of really serious health issues, obviously,
right?
You gotta be uber careful.
That's luckily my parents. My mom didn't feel well, but it wasn't COVID, and she didn't come to the party, so it worked out that everybody that was there was younger and. We're all able to handle it, so.
Yeah, man. Can't wait till this is over.
I don't think it'll ever be over. I think it's just going to become part of our life, kind of like the flu is.
Yeah,
and
I think so, too. Not causing us to kind of close in and hang out at home when you really want to go out and see folks and, you know.
Right, yeah. Make it more acceptable, normal.
Yeah.
Livable. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Great way to put it.
Totally.
All right. That was our COVID minute here on Brightside Chat. So other than that, hey, tell me about, I know this is kind of dating it, but tell me about this Yamaha. I read your review, but I want to hear it from you. It sounds really cool. You and I talked a little bit about it when you first got it, but yeah.
Yeah. That thing sat in the box for a long time. In fact, I have its little brother, the A4A, just finished putting that through its paces, and that's the next review that's going to come out. But
cool.
Yeah, the A8, the A8A, boy, that's a mouthful. It's the flagship receiver from
the flagship
from the Avantage. Yeah, it's really powerful. It sounded so good.
What was it? 150 per channel.
150 per channel.
Driven. Mm-hmm. Blah blah blah. I saw that.
And it can power 11 channels natively. So all of your past receivers required an outboard amp if you wanted to go up to a 7.2.4 setup. This one does it all. and it does it with confidence. And you really can't go wrong with it unless you're super picky about room correction. You know,
that's what I was going to ask you. How is it? It doesn't have Odyssey EQ.
It has something called YPAL.
So how is that?
I mean, it does the basics, right? So it gets the distances correct. It generally got the channel levels correct. And then it goes through and it performs its own correction. You can't preset any kind of target curve, which is a little bit of a miss in my opinion. But
okay,
it does do some correcting. And if you have a calibrated microphone, you can they give you four sub filters that you can adjust the Q for, the decibels, whatever, the range that you're going for, and you can put filters in. So if you have any really bad issues, it's got enough there to take care of them. I like Odyssey better. Like D-Rack a lot better. But also, you really, if you have issues that are big enough to be worrying to that degree, you should probably think about, you know, treating your room or moving your speakers or whatever it may be. Because, you know, the electronic correction only goes so far. But I got to tell you, man, once the movies start flying, it sounds so good. It's just a very confident, powerful piece of equipment. I'd happily, like I had told you, I'd happily keep it and use it.
That's awesome. And 11 channels driven is huge.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. It's like I have that in my receiver. And that was a selling point, not being able to run 11 channels and not having to get external.
Yeah.
My first Atmos receiver was an Onkyo, and it came, I could do nine. I believe I could do, maybe it was seven channels. I could do seven channels, but I could get up to 11.
Right.
That's what it was. And it was funny because I ended up I wanted Atmos, so I had to buy that external receiver, and I did. And I'm like, all right, well, what are you going to do? And you go down that, you go down that amplifier rabbit hole of should I get just four channels or two channels or whatever?
How much power
I had to get
need,
four channels. Yeah. So I was like, get five. And it's like, what a pain.
Yeah.
And it was like, actually, that's what it was. It was nine channels. You could run 7.2.
Right.
On that receipt, on the Onkyo. So you had to get two more if you wanted to have four overheads.
Which most back at that time, that's exactly how it was.
Right.
Not many. I think Marantz probably was one of the first to come out with
the 11.
With that full 11. Yeah. Maybe Onkyo did eventually Onkyo, also.
Yeah.
But I know Yamaha hasn't up until this point, but.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. It's. But I ended up, like I said, you go down the rabbit hole. I ended up buying a five-channel amp, Emotiva amp, and ran my mains with that and then did out the other ones. And, you know, it was a pain. And then what ended up happening is I had a guy come in, and he's looking around my room, and he was here to consult for some speaker upgrades. And he said, you don't really need speaker upgrades. I was running smaller NHTs than I have now. I had ones or zeros in the front, the bigger ones in the front. I always forget which one's bigger. And then I had the smaller ones in the rear. And he's like, you need an amp, you need a better receiver. And he pointed me to the Denon that I have now. And he goes, with the Odyssey EQ and everything like that, you don't even need that amplifier. I go, really? You don't think so? And he goes, no, watch this. And I upgraded to that. And I was like, holy, with the,
Do you ever think of throwing your mains on that amp? So dumping, using pre-outs to dump out to that amp?
And I have, and I messed with it, and I didn't hear a difference.
Okay. Yeah.
I honestly didn't hear between the Denon amps and then this. You don't hear a difference because it's a small room.
Yeah.
And the speakers don't really demand the extra wattage and the cleaner wattage or whatever you're going to get from the Emotiva.
Right.
And whatever you want. Maybe there was a difference, but I'm like, whatever.
If you can't hear it, I mean.
Yeah. It sounds so good to begin with. Right. And then how do you improve from that? And like a lot of people say, it's like, when do I need that amp? And it's like, well, when you run a larger speaker that requires more power. And but do I need that in this room? No. So I'm happy where I am.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a rabbit hole. You really.
Oh, it's brutal.
You start getting into separates and the money is just like.
Pew, pew, pew. Oh, And I want to do separates. I want to do more speakers. I want to do, someday I want to do a Trinov and I want to get those extra speakers. I want to run as many speakers as I can. I love doing that, but I need a bigger room for that.
Right.
You know,
well, it sounds like you're working in that direction.
I'm trying. I'm older. I'm like, I'm older and I don't have to pay as much for the kids anymore. Yep, so
they're off the payroll.
I'll do something. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. All right. Let's get to Under Siege here. And so this isn't your typical home theater. You don't hear a lot of people talking about this as a great home theater movie. Mm-mm. Because it's grainy. The picture is kind of grainy at a lot of times, right?
For sure, especially the dark scenes.
Oh, yeah. The dark scenes and the pulled back scenes too, like when they of the ship. Some of them look good, others not so good. But there are some scenes that looked pretty good, like the closer up scenes of people, and especially if it's brighter. You had the bright white, you know, the whites, the uniforms, mm-hmm. and stuff.
Yep.
I thought there were times that it looked the 1080p looked good. But I thought the sound was pretty good. What did you watch this on? Did you end up, do you have the disc or did you watch it a rental or something?
I bought it on Kaleidoscape. So HD version.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the disc version. Basically, yep. Disc quality.
Yep.
I actually went and rented it through iTunes to compare it a little bit.
Oh, wow.
And yeah,
what'd you
and
think?
It's not. It's the picture is definitely a step down. When we get into some of the scenes and stuff, there's when they're shooting over the top of the deck, mm-hmm. you can see some of the paneling on the planks, mm-hmm. of the deck looked really nice. Mm-hmm. A little bit muddied. That was one of the distinct ones. Mm. The sound was actually louder, but muddier, like all kind of blended together on the streaming. It was, but when you switched back and forth, AB'd, you'd be like, oh, wow, that's so much louder. But everything was, it just didn't feel as distinct and nice. The sound wasn't as good.
It's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, and but also the disc is really going to be clean. Compress the audio.
Yes.
So I think that's the one thing that you're going to notice the most.
Yeah.
For sure. On the streaming side.
Yeah. But
interesting.
Yeah, and then I also, did you upconvert it at all?
No. Okay. I ran it in, I think it was 5.1.
5.1, yep. It was, it's Dolby Digital, just straight Dolby Digital 5.1, even on the disc. And when I upconverted it, with Dolby Surround.
Okay.
That sounded pretty good. Hmm. But then up converting it with the Neural X,
yeah.
Way better. It was a noticeable difference.
Really?
I mean, they're both really good, but the Neural X, go figure, DTS had a little bit more bass punch to it.
Always
a little
does.
Fuller sound.
Yeah,
exactly. And then on top of that, it was the discrete sounds were just a little bit more discrete in the overhead usage. There's a couple of scenes that I'll talk about that have better overhead usage. It just sounded better. And I went back and forth between Dolby Surround up mixing and the Neural X. And the Neural X was every single time it was like, you were like, oh, wow, that just sounds better.
That's really interesting.
I mean, they're both going to be great. You can't go wrong. But the Neural X I just felt was noticeably better.
You need to get that Oro 3D upgrade.
I know.
Because Oromatic.
Yeah, because this podcast isn't long enough already.
Oromatic, I think, is better than both of those.
That's what I'm hearing.
I would be curious to hear what you think of their upmixing.
Yeah. But I think we talked about this in the past. Don't I have to install that Voice of God? And don't I have to get true oral 3D? Aren't the speaker placements different?
Yes, for true Oro 3D, but they have an upmixer called Oromatic, which you can use with your speaker layout.
As it is.
Yep.
I should do it. I think it's like, from Denon, I think it's like a $200 download into my receiver. Hmm. I could get it.
Yeah.
But I should look into that because that would just be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if I don't have to change my speakers.
You don't have to change your speakers. No, if you want the real Oro 3D experience, you would have to have ceiling height channels in the front and back. You don't need the voice of God, especially in a smaller room.
Okay.
And it's really good. I mean, true Oro 3D material. I don't want to derail us too much, but it's
why not?
It's really hot. I mean, it sounds so realistic. Just because the atmosphere that it builds is layered in the way that we hear. So it doesn't sound kind of manufactured by Hollywood. It just sounds expansive, like you're standing outside, essentially.
Yeah. You know?
It's so sweet.
Ugh. Yeah. All right.
But anyway.
Pause the podcast.
Yeah, you got to watch this again. You know, speaking of the audio, though, I did note that, I mean, it's definitely a little sharp. Did you catch that?
Yes.
Like
tinny,
a little tinny.
Like,
yeah. Which isn't unusual for older movies, but this is a 92, right? So
yeah, it's funny. It's like, I would really, there were some great scenes here that could really use the, what do you call it? The 4K upgrade, you know, the remastering. It could, there's some such nice scenes. And we'll, did you have a chance to get, did you get my list of notes, the email I sent? I tried to send you the notes and it had trouble going through. So you didn't get it?
No, I didn't. It'd be a surprise.
It had pictures with it and everything. It was great.
sorry about
that. No, that's, I think it's my fault. I had a lot of trouble with stuff today, internet wise. So hopefully this whole thing's being recorded, but all of the scene, I went through this and for a movie that isn't that good, it was still so much fun. I found a lot of scenes, 25 scenes that I want to talk about.
Wow.
And that I thought were fun. And I don't know, like, what did you think? Did you think that this was just horrible, unwatchable? No. Or did you think it was still worth, like, checking out?
I thought it, well, twofold. I mean, just coming from that era, there's a lot of faces in that movie. I took a couple notes on some of the actors that are in there that appear in other movies that we're all familiar with. So I thought that was really cool. And I did not know that the director also directed The Fugitive.
Oh, with Tommy Lee Jones was in that as well. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. As was another one of the characters, in the flick. So I thought that was kind of cool because I like The Fugitive.
Yeah.
That's a movie that I kind of dig back into from time to time. I thought it was fun. It's kind of like looking back in time, and it wasn't so cheesy that it was terrible. It definitely had its moments, and some of it was pretty hilarious. That was supposed to be the serious moments that were kind of funny, like Tommy Lee Jones getting his eye gouged out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. How bad that was at the end. It's like, all right, let's start getting into scenes. Our recommendation is, I think it's a really fun movie, and if you rent it, you're going to get a good quality experience. Yeah. I think the Blu-ray is noticeably better, for sure. The imagery is better. It's just a clearer picture, or a more clear picture. My wife will kill me. The English major. And the sound is better. But it's kind of in my opinion, it's kind of expensive right now. The Blu-ray is $25 on Amazon.
Is it really?
Yeah. Because I think it's just rare. I mean, like, nobody's buying it. Yeah. So, like, and you'd think it would be cheap. That's what I was thinking. I was hoping to go on Amazon and see that it was like $7 or $8 and be like, that I would say would definitely worth picking up.
Interesting. Wonder about eBay.
Maybe
you can score on eBay. It's definitely something that someone that enjoys these action, 90s action films should have in their collection.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
Absolutely. That's why I bought it. I'm like, I would love to see a 4K restoration of it. It doesn't even need Dolby Atmos. I thought the sound was good, especially being upmixed. But I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Let's get into the popcorn is popping. Let's get into these scenes so that we can start talking spoilers. And before we get into the opening scene and my description of what happened there, did you notice? I asked my son. My son had never seen this, and we sat down to watch it, and we went all the way through it. And I was waiting for him to say it, and he didn't see it. But did you notice, or do you feel that this is Die Hard on the ocean?
Oh, totally.
It is literally Die Hard on the ocean, because there's other movies people compare to Die Hard because Die Hard kind of, you know, it birthed all of these great, like, movies that had, like, a switcheroo in it and all of this and the everyman taking care of it, taking care of the day, saving the day.
Yeah.
But this one here is so dead on. And it, I mean, it even comes down to Tommy Lee Jones's character, Stranix, of he is, what's his name, from Die Hard.
Hans Gruber.
The bad guy. Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
He, I mean, even their motivation, what they're doing, and we'll get to the scene, but he even does the old, like, tries to give him, you remember Hans Gruber starts telling him, I want you to release my,
right.
You know, friends in arms. And while he goes on, Tommy Lee Jones goes on this whole thing about, like, We got an inch of topsoil left. And they're all like, in the war room, they're all like, what the hell is he talking about?
Same deal, right? Though, making these demands.
Yeah. And it's like, and he's a common thief. They're just stealing missiles for money.
Right.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. I just thought it was great. And I got a couple of those scenes listing. But the opening scene, that's where I always start with the opening scene, and I talk about, like, how the movie's open, and is it dynamic, is it not? And this one here, for a movie coming from 1992, I thought it was a lot of fun. It's, the screen just comes in black, but you can hear the knocking on the left and the right. Did you notice that? And it was up above, like, to the outside the screen, but up high, and it was... On the, what was it? On the left side? Let me see. I have it. The left side, I think, was the tinny one. And then the other, it was like a tink, tink, tink. And then the other side was like, doom, doom, doom. And they went back and forth. And I thought that was really cool. And I thought it was maybe foreshadowing that the prisoners in the in the movie are doing the Morse code.
They were doing Morse code to try and let everybody know. Yeah. Or let him know, I guess. I don't know who were they letting know? Because they all were jammed into that room.
Anybody on the ship? Because he actually noticed some people were in a room. Remember, later on in the movie, they were using it, and they were in a room. That was and I got to that scene. I have a fantastic, that we'll talk about, a fantastic movie goof. They made a mistake. Okay. Continuity error. Huge continuity error. Pretty funny. Pretty funny. But the score, I thought, was really good. The score comes in. And then that starts filling in, and then it starts filling in around the room, the nice bass in the score. Mm-hmm. And then the ship, they show the ship, and you start to hear the waves and the ship plowing through the water. Really nice bass there. I thought that sounded really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Yeah.
Good sound really design. Gets you into the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The next scene at 2:10, phone call. I call phone hang up, and it's when the captain of the ship, he's on the phone and he hangs up, and you're sitting there and you're watching it, and he hangs it up to the left side of the screen. That's perfectly placed sound right to the left side of the screen.
Wow. I didn't pick up on that. Or maybe I did, I don't remember it, but.
Yeah, that's what I do. That's what I do. I love that stuff. I love that stuff because those are the little things that we like to hear, and. You know, you're going through these movies like this, and it's like, oh, boink, drop that right in there. And the sound designer's placing it perfectly right to where he reaches off screen to hang it up, and that's where the sound lands. So but like you said, it's like, you're not noticing it, but it's there.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it just feels natural. I thought that was really cool. At 3:42, this is one of the picture that I thought was really nice. And it's the image. It's the wide shot at 3:42. Remember when they show it's the credits are still rolling. But you got the ship coming at you,
right,
with all of the crew lined up on the sides,
yep,
because the president's coming and they're having the whole ceremony and everything.
Right.
And they're retiring the ship, right? The story of that, because we don't use battleships anymore.
It's like a World War II era. Yeah. I mean, you could see the wood planking on the deck, and as you mentioned, definitely an old ship.
But the width of it and taking up that, which was, that's the other thing that I liked that I forgot to mention earlier, is the screen. It wasn't this cinematic screen. It was the CinemaScope. It was this full, you know, 16:9, 1/78:1 aspect ratio. You got the full glory. And then seeing that image at, like I said, at 3:42, if you want to go check it out, it's like just that big wide ship. It just looks so good. And you're like, oh, yeah, it's coming at you. I know,
plowing through the water.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It was so cool. 1029. All right. This one here, this is when Commander Krill, he's making his way. He's heading down to the kitchen. And he comes through the doorway, and did you hear on the right side of your room, and it wasn't to a speaker, it was kind of off to the side, but you could hear speaker announcements.
Oh, yeah.
On your right side.
Atmospherics in there, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome atmospherics in that one. You listen around the room, especially on that scene when he goes in and he first approaches Steven Seagal, like the Ryback. And they're having their conversation, listening to the stuff going on. You hear clanging, some banging going on. There's a conversation, actual people talking. You can hear that, but also the announcement, the speakers that you would, you know, to the intercom system, right. I should say, going on through the ship.
Sure.
Really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, they definitely made good use of the surrounds in situations like that, in those crowded rooms. I mean, there was a lot of activity going on in that kitchen. Also,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, there, even to the point, like when he's walking at you, Gary Busey, he's walking at you and they're closing an oven and they go to the shot of him walking at you and you can hear the oven close on, I think it's the left side of your screen. You can hear the clunk as that goes on, but then the speaker's on the right side of the screen.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Right.
Pretty cool. One that's not so cool. You had to have noticed this. What screen, what kind of screen were you watching this on?
235.1
fixed. Okay, you're yeah. So you had,
so it okay. was zoomed down to fit on.
Okay.
There.
All right. And how big was that? How big of an image do you got going?
It's here? Probably roughly like 100 inches.
Nice.
Something like that.
Nice. So you had to see this, and it was awful. Is at 12 minutes and 22 seconds, I called it bad FX. It's the cut on Gary Busey's face.
It just looks like plastic.
It's like they just stuck it on and said, shoot the picture.
Yeah, that looked really bad. I did notice that. As he was walking away, especially, he turned around and he said something.
Yeah, it's like it's almost flapping off.
Yeah.
Like you could see the edges it's of so the bad. Sticker that they put and then the blood running down trying to hide it. But it was just so, like, there was a cut in the middle.
Right.
And then you could see all around the image, like, all around the side was just, like, all, just, like, peeling up.
Right.
Like, bad wax.
Right. Well, and plus, they had gotten into that scuffle, right? And, like, yeah. minutes later, the blood is dried.
Yeah.
It stopped. Yeah, oh, yeah. It's just, like, dried. Those two little lines. Yeah. That was bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
It was so bad.
Which is a little surprising for a 92 film. I mean, 92, they were coming out with some decent.
It wasn't a lot of butt in the budget for the for the makeup crew, I guess. It's like it was just really, really bad.
That's hilarious.
But it was fantastic. Yeah. It's, I mean, I know that when I reviewed Jaws, that's 78, I believe. Mm-hmm. When they did that one. It's like you could see when they pulled up the shark that they thought they have and it was strung up.
Right.
You remember?
Yep.
You could see that it's obviously it's fake, but you could see the eye on the side of it is done with a Sharpie, like literally drawn on. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Go to that scene.
I've noticed it looks rubbery, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you look at the eye, it's not a black. I mean, even a dead shark with the eye open, right? Right. It'd be glossy. Right. It's still an eye.
But this is obviously
they literally went on with a black marker. It's you can't. I mean, it's you can't miss it. So and you got to know that in the 70s, they were like, who the hell's ever going to notice?
Nobody.
You know, I mean, if you're in a time machine, you'd be like, well, hey, the people in like. 50 years from now with 4K and high resolution. What's that?
Watching it over and over and
over and over.
Yeah, I think at that time they weren't thinking of those terms, right?
They weren't sure if it was going to get made.
Right.
That one. But yeah, they definitely weren't. They definitely weren't.
Yeah.
At 13 minutes, 17 seconds, this one here was where I really used the upmixing, really compared the upmixing. It's the rotors, I called it. And we're inside the helicopter, and Erica Elenick and Tommy Lee Jones are coming in.
Yep.
And when they first pan in, you see the helicopter coming to the ship. It's the dual rotors, right? Mm-hmm. And you got that nice long shot. Actually, it was a pretty good looking shot.
It was, yeah.
Then you go inside the helicopter and you get the conversation between the two. But the how was the sound for you? Like, did you hear like the rotors over your head?
Yeah, it was elevated. Yeah. Surprisingly so, but definitely. And I, you know, I'm glad you mentioned this because that sound, the helicopter rotor sound, is my favorite home theater sound, bar none. I mean, I love it. I love movies that have the helicopter. I mean, Lone Survivor has some great helicopter rotors. Deepwater Horizon has a great helicopter rotor scene. What's the Black Hawk Down?
Black Hawk Down. Just because I was waiting for that one.
That thumping, because you get a little bass.
It's deep. Yeah.
And yeah, it just really resonates well in my room. For whatever reason, sounds really expansive. Love rotors. It's kind of a weird thing to like, but it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, but it really lends itself to Atmos, for one, having those overhead speakers. And this is one that was very noticeable when I swapped between the Dolby Surround up mixing and the DTS Neural X up mixing. Again, the Dolby Surround up mixing sounded good. And it was like, I was watching it in that and I'm like, okay. And then I went to the DTS Neural X and I was like, oh my, it's like, really? So there, yeah, that it was just, again, like you said, the rotors have that deep bass, right? That the foom, foom, foom. It's not a pump. It's not like this type, like that hits you, but it's there's a thump to it, right?
It's like an air concussion, right? Or
it's
pounding.
And I just felt like the Neural X, it gave you a little bit more of that, and it utilized the overheads more, giving you more of a sense that you're in that helicopter. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas I felt like, obviously, if you're not A-B-ing and going back and forth like this, they both sound great, and you're just going to be like, oh, it sounds like it's over my head. But it felt like the Neural X brought the sound a little bit more to the middle of the room.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas the Dolby Surround felt like it was, okay, it was mostly the sides, not as much overhead usage, not as loud, whereas maybe the Neural X actually pumps a little more volume out of the overhead speakers, so it gives you that little bit better sense.
Interesting.
And obviously you're getting a little bit more out of your subs.
Yep.
It's boosting your bass ever so slightly. Mm-hmm. It's just really, really nice. But either way, it is a fun scene. It's that just that you feels like you're in that helicopter.
So funny that they're talking inside the helicopter. I mean, if you were in that helicopter,
you can't.
No.
No. But that's a great point too. The dialogue was crystal clear. Everything we were just talking about the overheads and all of that bass and everything, that dialogue was crystal clear. It's not like you were like, what did they say? I can't hear, but which is the way it should be.
Right.
But yeah, that's a great point. I didn't even think of that they have no headset on.
None.
They're just talking to each other.
It would be so deafening back in that hall, I guess you would call it, the seating area that they're in. I mean, it's just
she's
like
putting
steel
on lipstick.
I know.
Like that's I've never been in one of those, but I can't imagine it's like sitting in a parked car.
No,
like it's hard to put on lipstick in a moving car. Never mind a helicopter coming in. And to begin with, she ends up getting sick from the ride.
Right.
So it's not smooth.
Right.
But she's like, I'm just gonna do my lipstick here. You kidding me?
So funny. Her character was. I don't know.
It was fantastic. It was fantastic. I time stamped the scene. So we'll talk about that because it's fantastic. Yeah. It's funny. We'll get to it. But yeah. Oh, and the helicopter rotors, one more thing. I didn't time stamp this, but when they land, right? And then the crew is coming up to the helicopter and they're putting in the chucks and stuff. When those rotors start going slow. I wish I did timestamp, but I do remember it. There was a boom overhead.
Oh, really?
A single, nice.
As it slowly.
Yep. It was really nice. So when it's landed on the deck, you can hear it as the people are walking under it, and it went boom, boom. And I was like, oh, wow, that was it was way more distinct and singular. So it was really, really cool.
Cool.
All right. This one here gets into the story of it, which is you laugh because like story to Under Siege. But at 21 minutes, 24 seconds, I called it Commander Green. So I said in this one, this is when Tommy Lee Jones shoots. This is when the action all starts, right? And Tommy Lee Jones shoots the highest ranking officer in that room.
Right.
Right. Did you ever notice that that's the giveaway on how much knowledge Tommy Lee Jones has? Because we find out later that he is part of the intelligence community.
Right.
Naval intelligence or whatever, yeah. Whatever. But in this scene here, he's supposed to be the rock star. That's what we know him as. This is the big reveal that these are the bad guys, right? And he's up there acting like a rock star. He's got his black leather jacket on, and he asks, who's the highest commanding officer in this room? And this guy stands up, and he says, I'm the highest commanding officer here. He goes, and they're like, what are you? And he's like, the operations officer, third in command. That's all he says. And then Tommy Lee Jones reaches back and says, it's a pleasure to meet you, Commander Green. And he shoots him.
Oh, so he knew who he was.
He knew his name.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So that's like, it's a little giveaway that he even knew who he was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that actually plays out later for Steven Seagal's character, too. Because you just, obviously, we're supposed to think he's just a chef.
Right. Right.
But it's just the idea of that is like, first time you're seeing this, when I saw it in the 90s in the theater, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. But he calls him by name, Commander Green.
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. I had to go back and rewind it to see if anybody says Commander Green or anything like that. But he just says Commander Green and then shoots him in the forehead. But that gunshot, it's not a devastating bass sound, but this is where I think, like you were saying earlier, the tinnier sound, mm-hmm. the sharper sound,
mm-hmm.
but there was a nice echo to it, and it sounded like it was in a metal room, mm-hmm. which is, I suppose, what it's like to be on a battleship, correct?
Yeah. I mean, all those walls, which makes it really funny if you think about the fact they were playing a concert
right
in that room, and it sounded perfect, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's like, yeah, you know how awful that would sound.
It would hurt.
Yes. Everyone would be like, turn it off.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't see a lot of like room treatments on the walls of a battleship.
It's just metal, basically.
It's, yeah.
Right.
It's just metal. They're all rocking out. But that gunshot, it was really, really cool. And then the chaos starts, but it doesn't overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hear people moving and running because it's not like everybody just starts opening up. But when they go to the part where all the cooks and stuff, that the catering crew, they all reach under the table and pull out their guns.
Right.
Nice security.
Right.
And
right.
It's like, but yeah, they pull out their guns and everything. You can hear all the different people around the room start to. Things are going on all around you.
Gunshots are going off.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit, not a ton, because they're making a point. They're not just there to kill everybody, but they're if you get out of line,
right?
But yeah, a lot of fun sounds around, a lot of good ambient sounds of the chaos going on, but you could still hear the dialogue very clear, locked up front, really, really cool. At 23 minutes and 22 seconds. Learning experience, and this is where you get to Tommy Lee Jones shoots that one guy because the first guy, the big black guy, they attack him with the gun, and then he unloads on him,
right?
And then Tommy Lee Jones shoots the guy next to him, and that's when you get the "we'll not only kill you, but we'll kill the man next to you,"
right?
But that single gunshot had really nice bass to it and a really nice echo because they're in that like hallway area there. But you could also hear the ticking start. And remember we were talking earlier at the opening that goes throughout the movie at different times in the different, but it's the same on one.
They
on the
were
right,
already
on the left.
They were already tapping at that point.
No, no, no. This is all part of the score.
Oh, part of the,
score.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Cause I thought the score was a lot of fun.
Totally. And by the way, that the really big guy that they had, the big black guy that was
the big black guy. Yeah. Yeah.
He did nothing. He looked like the most menacing equipped guy of them all. Like he would just rip somebody's right. head off, forget his gun, throw it. He did nothing. I mean, he goes down with a whimper. It's so pitiful.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I like to, do you want to get into a little bit of the, are you a fan of Steven Seagal movies?
I wouldn't say a fan. I mean, I've seen some of them, but he's not somebody that I ever followed per se.
Oh, I loved them all. I like, you know, what was the first one? Above the Law, I think was the first one that he did. And then after that, I just loved that. And then I started following, like, you could read it back then. There was no internet, but you could read in articles and stuff. Like, was it Aikido? Was his martial art of choice?
Right.
And he's really good too, not just for the movies, but he's multiple degree black belt in Aikido and stuff. And what I always thought was funny though, what's interesting about Aikido is that it's a defensive martial art. It's right. like the idea of it is you let them attack and you use their momentum and whatever they're doing, their body against them.
Right.
So it's not very offensive. So what you end up with, and if you watch a lot of Steven Seagal movies, watching him get in a fight is he stands like he reaches or steps away from them, puts his arms up, and it almost looks like they're going to get in a slap fight.
Right. Because he's constantly just like moving his hands around. Right.
Right. Just to take them. And it's like all he's doing. And that's what Aikido is. It's like he's not doing it wrong. He's doing it perfectly. But it's like, grab them and then just like, because when you reach out to punch, your momentum's coming forward. Well, his job is to grab that and take that momentum and keep it going forward. Now you're off balance, and he obviously you see what he does to you. But it always looks like a.
Well, it's funny because some of the MMA folks, I know, like Joe Rogan has commented that Steven Seagal would just get smoked if you put him into the octagon.
Yeah, it's there's a huge debate on that because. So a lot of MMA, a lot of like Brazilian jiu-jitsu is, I've never taken Aikido, but I've done a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And the idea of that is the exact opposite. Okay. So somebody's going to attack you. You do the exact opposite. Like, so say you and I are in a fight and, or you like, oh, I'm going to kill, and you're like, get your hands up. As soon as your hands come up or you feel that threat, I feel your threat. Boom, I'm right in tight on you, and I just pull you down, and then I just smother you. And that puts people off balance right away. And like, so like what Rogan's saying is right, is that like if somebody wanted to threaten, you know, Steven Seagal, all of a sudden they would just get in tight on him, and he's like, what do you do? Because you'd be like, you can't do it. You'd be like tapping you on the head, you know? So, but at the same time, if you came at, he's an expert at dealing with you coming at him. Mm-hmm. So if you came at him, he would probably find a way to counter it, but it would be your expertise trying to not get taken advantage of. I think it would be a very interesting situation.
It's too bad he's so old.
Oh, well.
I'd love to see it happen, but never see it happen.
No, it's two different theories. One's back up and use the momentum. The other one is get in tight because they can't hurt you here as badly. And then you take advantage and now you take them down and smother them. Mm-hmm. So obviously though, if Brazilian jiu-jitsu, if somebody's got a weapon, it's tough. They got a knife. It's hard to get in tight on that.
Right.
You know, that who knows? So I don't know. It's just, but it is a fun debate. I've had it with many people and you go back and forth and I've had it with karate guys. My family was taking karate with he was a Kenpo karate black belt. Mm-hmm. And I was doing the Brazilian jiu-jitsu at the time. And I was probably, I don't know, second belt, whatever. We didn't have belts. We were just messing around, but we were taking it. And I was explaining exactly what I'm explaining here. And next thing you know, right in front of this guy, well, his class is waiting in the waiting room to come in and we're messing around on the mats. And I just came right in, shot in on him, took him down. And I was like, this is what I'm talking about. He's laying flat on black belt, laying in Kenpo, flat on his back. Like, oh, but he'd never experienced Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So,
right.
You know what I mean? It's a disadvantage. If you have no experience, the guy with just a little experience, I don't care what belt you have, it's going to be weird to you. And that's what happened. So
I've seen a lot of the different old Gracie films.
Yeah.
Of him taking people down, like the 70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the Gracie family's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gracie family's huge. It's like, I don't know if you followed MMA and like the original in the 90s of UFC with Hoist Gracie.
No.
Okay, so
but I'm familiar with the Gracie family. I've heard
yeah.
a few of them interviewed, and
yeah, they sent Hoist to the UFC to dominate the UFC, and he was like the third ranked in the family, third or fourth. Mm-hmm. He wasn't even the best family fighter. He has like three of they have like four or five brothers or whatever family members that basically developed this Brazilian jiu-jitsu, Gracie jiu-jitsu. And they were like, oh, we'll send a little guy down, see how he does with them. And he dominated it. It's like nobody in North America had a clue on what this was.
Wow.
And it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, you could see the jiu-jitsu in at the end of Lethal Weapon. That's what he's using. That's what Mel Gibson's using. And Gary Busey, by the way.
Really?
That's jiu-jitsu, yeah. When they're fighting on the front lawn and the sprinklers, the water's going on them.
Yeah.
When he gets up, he ends up getting them in a triangle with his legs, and then he ends up on arm bar. It's when you remember when Mel Gibson was like on the back of his neck and his legs are up in the air and he's for holding sure. his arm.
Yeah.
And then they fall to the side and yeah. he has his neck. Well, in that position there, he can choke him out or he can break his neck just with his knees. And because he's got his arm locked up here, and we've done that. It's like when you get a guy in that, you're like, ah, how do you get out of it? And you're just so locked in. But the idea is you just squeeze your knees together and you choke them.
That's pretty progressive for Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, it's very accurate. And that was 84?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has been around a while, but that was legit. I think they even say Jiu-Jitsu when they say, oh, you're like new, you know, jiu-jitsu, blah, blah, you got registered as a lethal weapon, whatever. But I think they use the term jiu-jitsu too. But most of us, I was like, I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Wasn't until I was in it that I started seeing it. I was like, oh my God, they're doing it. Yeah, it's like, it's pretty accurate too. Yeah, cool. It was pretty good. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yep. So what are we on for scenes here? Oh, here's a cool ambient sound, the phone conversation at 28 minutes and 38 seconds. You were talking earlier. So this is when that poor guy, Private Nash, who's he called him a dipshit or whatever. when Steven Seagal's in the meat locker and Private Nash is guarding him, but he tells Private Nash to call the bridge, so he does, and that conversation jump cuts back and forth between the kitchen and the bridge, and. That's what your room. It's so much fun if you're in a dedicated room or if you have, you know, a good system going on in your living room, you can really hear those ambient sounds and how much different they are. And like in the kitchen, when Private Nash is on the phone, you hear all just the, like the vents going on.
Sure.
But then you go to the bridge and you can hear beeping and computers running. There's a different, like a fan noise to a computer type thing, plus the vents. And just jumping back and forth was just really cool. And you could hear that. And it's like, what volume did you listen to this at?
Oh boy. Probably about 10 decibels below reference.
So, oh, okay.
I'm decently loud.
Yeah. I always go to reference for everything so that I can.
Wow.
I mean, if you always listen at the same volume, you'd still get kind of the same effect. Mm-hmm. You'd know if it's a little low, a little high, this or that. But I always try to go to reference. There was a movie recently I was watching that I actually had to turn it down. It was just too loud. But most of them, everybody in the house knows what I'm doing. It's like my wife's always laughing at it. Like, all right, here we go. I get a text. A little loud down there.
Yeah, it's great.
But when you go up to reference like that, you get it really brings out all those ambient sounds and stuff. Really, really, like just everything's accentuated even more. Yeah. I think. Anyways,
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah, this one here at 31 minutes in the reefer. That's when they go into that. So the. Mission, the terrorists or whatever you want to call them, the What are these bad guys called? I don't know.
I think you call them terrorists.
Mercenaries.
Yeah.
Yeah. They kill Private Nash once he tells them where he is. And then they go into the refrigerator. But when they first go into the refrigerator, you see them. The camera goes into the refrigerator. First, they just start shooting inside the refrigerator, right?
Taking out boxes and.
Yeah, and you see stuff shooting everywhere. And then they go. The camera goes inside the refrigerator. And he comes in from the right side of your screen.
Right.
And the gunfire is on the right side. Really cool because it's coming from the gun, right? But the left side of your room is the of bullets hitting.
Right.
Very distinct.
Yep.
Really nice.
Yep. Yeah. I like that scene a lot for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is one where. When I up converted it, the Dolby surround still nice, but the Neural X just had that fuller, especially in the sound on the left side of the room.
Really interesting. I'm gonna have to go back and do that once I get this receiver back out and put my regular system back online. I'll go through and
play
around with.
What's your regular system?
What's your regular? It's a Storm Audio processor.
Ooh.
And it's a lot of fun to play with. And I've got eight height channels and seven multi channels.
Oh, okay. So what are your height channels? You had eight like overheads or four overheads and then
four are front and back.
Right.
Top ceiling tops. And then I have one directly over the seating and one about 5 feet forward of the seating. But the way it's configured in the system is when Atmos is engaged, it uses all eight speakers. For Atmos. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's seamless movement of sound from above. So if you have you ever heard the Atmos demo disc?
Yep.
Has the helicopter going around the room. It's just perfectly seamless. As it goes around, there's no sound gap or like dip in decibels as it's kind of moving from the back to the front or whatever.
Right.
So I have that. And then I have the, surrounds, rear surrounds, the three front and four subs. It's
how big is the room?
It's 18 by 13.
It's a decent size room.
It's decent size, but the subs are really there just for the overhead. You know, it's just to have that headroom.
Yeah, you definitely want. I mean, I have two in this room, and my room's like 11 and a half, by 18. So it's
roughly
not
the
very
same.
Big.
Roughly the same size as yours, as mine.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's I got two SVS PB 2000s, and they're way too much for this room, but I could have got away with the 1000s, but I wanted that extra depth that you get in the decibels. I think the 2000s go down to like 16, I think, and I just wanted that. And like you said, having that headroom, it's you're never lacking. And I mean, it's when I get a bigger room than this, hopefully someday when we do the addition, I want to run four big subs and
get is this evenness of sound, right? So that's the main reason why I have four, is just to really even out
of course
everything. But I mean, it's so overkill. I've got dual 16s on the front, so the SB16
ultras.
And then the back I have Power Sound Audio.
Okay.
They're an older model, but they are dual opposed 15 inch drivers on each.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's so overkill, it's not even funny. But it sounds really good. Yeah.
That's fun.
I mean, when it gets kicking, it's pretty,
right.
Pretty rock. I mean, it's really, really cool. So
most of what we have is overkill.
Oh, right? 100%. As case in point, the Yamaha RX A4A that I'm reviewing, it sounds really good. I mean...
Yeah.
You pull anybody off the street and sit them down, they would be like, wow, this is amazing, even though it's a five multi-channel with two overheads.
It's a
7.1 channel receiver, and it still sounds really, really good. So
I've said to so many people, it's like there becomes a point when like it's just such small incremental improvements that when you go from something like, but we appreciate that. We can hear that stuff, right? Yeah. Most people can't hear the difference or see the difference in a $20,000 like system, say, or a $20,000 picture.
Yeah.
Or a $1,000 picture.
Yeah, I happen to live with those people.
Yeah. Well, I had a listener, I talked about it earlier this week. I had a listener email me and said he had some disposable income during the pandemic, and he's like, I had some time on my hands. So he upgraded and bought three TVs for his house, and he bought a LED TV, an OLED TV, all different levels, and he wanted to see the difference. Wife didn't see a difference in any of them. She thought they were all the same. And he's like, and it's like, but that's how, and I end up, he sends me this email, and I'm poor guy, I end up sending him this really long email back saying like, this is my life because I'm like so detail oriented. It's the way my brain works. So I've always seen these little things. And then as you get better at it, you start to see more and more and more. But I also understand because of that, like my dad always taught me like the world doesn't see things the way you do. You know, it was like, and I understand that. And you have to like, and when I go to help people doing home theater, and this is what I was saying in my podcast earlier this week, is that it's like, you don't want to just send them to the best possible stuff right away when they're first getting into it, because they don't even know what they don't know. They don't even know what to appreciate yet.
Right. And they may never get to the point where they even care to go further.
Yeah. Right. They may never. And then they're just happy having, the reason this came up is I always recommend to somebody when you go into a first big image, right? You've had a 65 inch TV, but you want to get it bigger. Doesn't matter. What's the best TV for me? The best TV for you, and I always say this, is the biggest you can afford. Just find the size you can fit, and then I don't care. The quality doesn't matter, because when you first go to that biggest size you can get, you're just going to be so blown away with that size, right? And then what? It's like, then you're like, then as the year, you know, and I always say like, give it a year or two. And if you start to see flaws, start looking into asking questions. How do I make this part better? Mm-hmm. Then you upgrade to the other TV that maybe you, but like you just said, most of the time, they're usually just blown away with the large picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. TVs are getting so good these days.
Yeah.
I mean, it's legit. Maybe his wife really didn't see a difference because
they don't know what to look for.
They don't know what to look for. They're also getting pretty good, though. I mean, it's amazing what you can get for $1,000 versus $2,000.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but then you go up into the, I mean, I'm starting to look at, and I've said on the podcast a bunch of times and online, I mean, I think you and I talked about it, the new 98-inch, you know, 98, what is it, a 98-inch
Sony?
TCL.
The TCL. 98,
the TCL, 98 inches, and it's only $8,000 for 98 inches. I'm sure it's not the best quality, but I mean, we had this conversation a couple of times ago when you were on about, you know, OLED versus projectors and the compromises you get out of using a projector, the image quality and stuff. And which is worse? I would love to get a hold of one of these TCLs and be able to see what the image looks like compared to a decent image from a projector.
What about one of those short throws, the ultra short throw lasers?
I haven't heard them compared to anything. I've never seen one.
They're good.
Right?
They're good.
But how do they stack up against like the JVCs and the better Sony?
Oh, no. They're not that kind of good. I was speaking in terms of if you're looking at like a 98-inch TCL.
Yeah.
You might be able to get a short throw that would put up like a 120-inch image for $5,000.
Right. But that's what I wanted to see. Like, I have the entry-level 4K Sony with the Lumagen attached to it. What am I getting? I know I'm getting a really good image out of that.
Yeah.
How does that TCL stack up to this? Mm. I don't know.
Good question.
You know, yeah, because
black levels are probably a little better.
Yeah, exactly. I would think your black levels are going to be better. Maybe the color is not as good, not as accurate. Yeah. I don't know. There's going to be, you're giving up something.
Yeah.
But for $8,000 today, and my screen here is at 110 inches. So we're not far off. Mm-hmm. And I know Sony, is it Sony? Who? Somebody has, maybe it's Samsung. Samsung has 110 inch available. That you can buy today, but it's like tens of thousands of dollars.
So does Crazy Sony. Money. Sony has a new one out that's like a 100, I think it's 110 inches.
Yeah. And that one I think is that $16,000?
It might be. It's a lot. Far more than I would ever pay for a TV.
But if you're trying to get, people are paying that for a projector, right? And if you can do 110 inches on a with a display, you're going to have better black levels. You're not running a Lumagen through that. You're not running a video processor through that because you're getting the full gamut. Who knows, right?
That's so
you're saving money. I'm thinking at 16, between my projector and the Lumagen, your price tag on that, your retail tag on that is about $12,000.
How many zones is that TCL have?
I don't know.
I'm curious to see. I'll have to go look and see, because you're talking about a huge area, right? So
yeah,
in dark scenes, if you don't have a lot of zones, it can't be edge lit. There's no way they're edge lighting that, but you would end up, you might end
I
up
hope
with
not.
Some, yeah, that would, I'll have to go look and see. It's an interesting idea.
It's a good comparison. Because that's the market you're going for. Well, actually, I think by the getting bigger panels like this and being able to bring those in, I think it makes the I said online on Twitter that I think you're going to start to see a lot more dedicated home theaters popping up.
Oh yeah,
because it's just simpler to do, right? Yeah. Don't you think? Like a lot of people, like when you say, "Oh, how do I get a nice big screen?" Well, you got to get a projector, so you got to get a screen, you got to run a cable, you got to do a It's a non-starter. People are like, never mind.
Let alone know how to use the projector properly.
Right.
I mean, these are things that you just turn on and just use for the most part.
Right. But you have to be into the hobby and willing to tinker.
Tweak. You got to go in and tweak things in the menu systems and, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's not like you bring home your TV, you mount the stand to the back, turn it on and go, all right, vivid mode, go.
Right.
You know,
if only it were that easy. Yeah.
But I think if you get a 110-inch display and the prices start coming down, you may start seeing receivers going up, you know, sales going up. You see dedicated rooms because you're not putting 110-inch in your living room.
No.
You know,
somebody might be doing that, but not many people have that kind of space.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's that's why I think that's where it's going to go. And then if the quality is there, that's when you start to see projectors go away.
Yeah.
Because people are like, why do I want, like my media room with all my gear in it is on the opposite end of where my projector is, just because of the way the house is designed, right? Mm-hmm. So I have to run at least a 30-foot cable to my projector. If it's on that wall, I'm running a short right into the display. Boom, you're done. And it's just easier, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd like to see it. All right. Let's get back to a scene here. And this is a really nice one. 33 minutes, 53 seconds. The F-18.
Yes. Which, by the way, just a correction, it's an FA-18.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. FA stands for fighter attack, which is what the Hornet is known for. It can dogfight and it can bomb.
Oh.
So the second they said that, I was like, come on, these are the military leaders and they're saying F-18. It's actually FA-18. And that was a good shot of it too, as it's flying.
Yeah. Well, when they first, alerted to it, the guys on the bridge are like, we got an F-18 coming in. That's what they said. I was going to correct it, but they actually said,
we can stick with the F-18. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, so you hear about that, but then when they jump cut to it flying by. You get the boom, almost like in Top Gun when they go to afterburners or whatever, but you just whoosh right across. It's not a huge pan across your screen, but you just get that nice, you know, thunderous sound come into your room.
Yeah, I like that scene.
With a whoosh.
Yep. Yeah, there's definitely really cool. a good feeling of that. Yeah, you got that because it's an outside shot with the ship, and you really get that sense of space.
Yeah, at 34:55 is the flyby when, this is obviously before they shoot it down, but it comes at you. You're looking at the front of the ship. Mm-hmm. And then the FA-18 comes in, you know, from the stern. Mm-hmm. Comes in from the stern.
There you go.
And then it flies down the starboard side. I learned for this, just for this. It flies down the right side of the ship, the starboard side of the ship. But that's on the port side of your screen. It's the left side of your screen.
Right.
But the sound was really cool because you heard it coming from the center, and then it starts as it appears from behind the ship. The sound shifts to the left side of your screen.
Yeah.
And then it jump cuts away before it could actually fly by you. But it was a really nice half screen pan of that sound of the FA-18 going, you know, and it was really, really cool.
Very cool. Unfortunately, that guy, he's like, I don't see anything. Boom, gone, right?
No. Are you locking on me? Yeah. No, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Flying his plane. Okay.
Kind of silly. They send him in, and they don't send any more to kind of be in the area to keep air traffic out of the way. You know,
yeah, when does an FA-18 go out unsupported? Ever?
No, I doubt. I mean, come on.
In real life? Yeah.
It was kind of hokey. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I remember 9/11 and they sent out fighters out of our area. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing, and it's like, then you start hearing the rumors from military people. And then, I mean, it was online and stuff too, but supposedly once they hit that tower, we had planes from, I don't know if it was Hanscom up here or one of the bases up here, and they were in New York City inside of 5 minutes.
Yeah. Without weapons on them, though, right?
Yeah, and it was, but they got them out, and it was two of them, from what I heard, and it was always two of them. Yeah. So I'm just bringing it up because here you got this one lone FA-18 flying around the ocean.
Flying around, yep.
Yeah,
it's out there. Happens to be out there, right? Yeah, no, definitely a little hokey, but
played to the movie.
Sure, sure. My immediate thought is, if that was really happening, wouldn't they just sink the ship?
But then that was part of the story. They were trying to save the people in the forecastle, right? Because everybody was trapped in the forecastle. They were trying to save the crew, and they're like, "We could just sink this ship." And that was the purpose of him saying, like, of Tommy Lee Jones trying to stall for time. Because if he just told them that I'm just gonna unload these tomahawks, they would have just sunk the ship like that.
Right.
So he was trying to stall for time, and they were trying to be like, oh, okay, well, maybe we can take the ship back. But they're, because remember at the end, he says, call off your planes, because they had bombers coming in.
I guess in my head, my first go-to option is just blow it up. Just take it down. I mean,
the crew.
Yeah, just take it out.
The crew, Erica Elenick. Oh, God.
The world would be a much sadder place.
Yes, it would. At 36:48, Mr. Breaker. This is the guy, Tom Breaker. He was the head of intelligence in the war room.
Okay.
And this is when we first get into the war room. And this is another scene where tons of great ambient sounds. It's another scene. So we were in the kitchen so far. We've been in the ship. We've been in the, you know, on the bridge, you get those different sounds, but this war room, you can hear like a radio conversation going on, like somebody, like a CB radio conversation speaker going on the left side of your room. You have ventilation going on in the war room. You hear typing going on different sides of the room, beeping on the right side, typing on the right side. Just really another ambient scene that had great, you know, engagement around your room. Yep. And this is where the Hans Gruber type thing. This is where we first hear when Stranex has his conversation with, remember, he's like, this is Tom Breaker. And then Tommy Lee Jones talking in a microphone. Looks like he's podcasting the way the microphone's hanging down.
I know.
And he's like, and he goes, oh, hi, Tom.
Right.
he's like, hey, how you doing? He goes, you tried to kill me, you know? And it's like, but he starts talking about Tommy Lee Jones, talking about global warming and changing the world. And it's like, you know, and everybody in the war room's like, what? Like, what's he talking about?
You know, not much different than The Rock with General Hummel.
Yeah.
Calling in.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, hey, Frank.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there was,
what's going on? We got some really worried people down here. You know, it's the same. They took the same scene and just bent it into The Rock.
Yeah,
which was, exactly. What, 96, 95, 96? So a few years later.
And it was The Rock.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're right. At 42 minutes, 38 seconds, this is the the planks on the ship where you got... You got that nice long shot of them just going down the length of the ship and looking at the deck of the ship and seeing those the different colored planks, because they're all, you know, they're all brown, but they're just the different colors and or tones, I should say. But then when you went to the streaming version, those planks, the detail wasn't there as much. It's like, on the Blu-ray, you could almost make out like the grooves in each plank, between each plank, right?
For sure. 100%.
And then, but on the streaming, you kind of lost those little darker lines. It looked a little bit muddier, a little bit more digitized as you went down the ship. Still looked really good, but it was going back and forth. You could definitely see there was a crisper, nicer image. You know, on the disc, and the entire movie, the shots of the ship are really beautiful. And it's like, they did a lot of, you know, justice for that ship and making it look as good as it did. And this one long shot going down, looking down on it.
It's kind of a fly. It was from port to, right?
Was starboard to port? I think, you know, they went,
it was coming
from the rear, and then you started at the rear and went to the front of the ship, and then because you started to see it plowing through the water,
they trail
off over the front of it.
Yeah,
and it's just the detail was so nice, and that's at 42:38. I highly recommend checking that out. And these are ones that, wouldn't it be? I wish it had the popularity, or somebody wanted to do it, but a 4K restoration. Mm-hmm. How good would that look?
Pretty darn good. I mean, yeah, because there's definitely a lot to work with.
And they have the foot. I mean, if it's shot on film, so the film, there's no K, there's no resolution to film.
They
it's
can
just
pull
there.
Anything off it that they want.
Yeah. So to be able to get that, I think it would look so good.
Yeah.
I mean, this does, like we said before, there's a lot of flaws with this. You know, the Blu-ray. There's a lot of grain at times.
Yeah.
There's, you know, when we get to that scene in the knife fight, and you get the special effects there weren't very good. Kind of go along with Gary Busey's scar on his face, but yeah, it does. It looks so good at times. But speaking of looking so good at 43 minutes and 20 seconds, I labeled this one gratuitous.
Yep.
It's because here's the thing. You got Erika Eleniak in it, and that cover on Playboy, she actually was in that Playboy.
Oh, was she?
That was real. Yeah, that was real. I was watching this with my son, and they remember at the beginning, they show him walking on, and I'm like, and they're like, hey, she's a Playboy centerfold. She actually was on there. Huh. And I want to say that was the reason she almost didn't get her job on Baywatch. Because of it, because they didn't want Playboy centerfold on Baywatch. They wanted a family show in bathing suits. But that was the cover, and that was the issue that she was in that they actually used in the movie. Hmm. But then when you get to this dancing scene, what I think when she comes out of the cake, and it's like, what's so funny is like, we need a way to get her topless in the movie,
right?
And it's like, he kicks the cake And then she comes out of it, and it's like, what was the cue for her to start dancing?
Right. I know. It's hilarious. Like,
and how long has she been sitting in there? We're 43 minutes into the movie.
She said that she was drugged.
Yeah.
So she was probably asleep in the cake.
Right.
And then she's all confused. Yeah.
She's all confused, but comes out and starts dancing perfectly.
Right. I know.
It's like, and the music is queued up.
I know. It's
like,
hilarious.
What? It's like all he did was kick the cake out of the way because it's in the way, right? So Steven Seagal kicks a cake. Cake on wheels slides across the room. And she, like, comes out of it the way you're supposed to come out of a cake.
Right.
With the music blaring, and she just starts dancing. There's nobody in the room. It's like, it makes no sense whatsoever why anybody would do this, but they had to, but it, nobody cares.
Right.
It's like the guys going to see this movie are like, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm here to see Steven Seagal kick butt and Erica Elenik to do her thing.
Now, doesn't Seagal take off his jacket to put on her?
Yeah, well, she had a jacket on. She had the sailor jacket on that she took off, and then she sees that there's nobody around and there's a gun pointed at her. Right. So she covers up.
Right.
And then he covers her up and they go into the room and, you know, have a conversation with her.
Which just cracks
me
up because he's got like this like green. He's got the army green wife beater
on,
you know, and his arms are
from Die Hard,
are tan.
Yeah.
I think he has a gold chain, right? It's hilarious.
Yeah.
They've got that scene. You know, the other thing I noted about Seagal, every close-up of him had this soft white light. Perfect.
Did it?
Yeah. Go back and look.
I'll have to check that
out.
Yeah.
It's almost, I was wondering if it's like a requirement of his, of how they shoot his face. But
yeah,
all these scenes, you know, when they get that up close of him, there's always this light just perfectly cast.
That's funny.
Right across his face. Just a soft glow, you know?
Right. Well, it's kind of like, remember Moonlighting? Mm-hmm. And they'll show Bruce Willis's face, right? His face was like a guy, right? Mm-hmm. Like you could see the stubble, you could see the wrinkles in his face, right? But then they go to Cybill Shepherd, and it was like, they didn't clean the lens. It was like
very soft.
It's like very soft, like a filter over it. Like, even the light behind her was glowing differently. Everything, because it was so, they just threw a filter over the camera on her.
Yeah. And it's I think they were doing the exact same thing for Seagal. They were just giving him that like godlike heavenly look, right? You know, it's hilarious. Go back and check it out.
Once you pick up on it, you see all
these scenes, you're like, wait a second.
Well, what's funny is I have it on right in front of me.
Oh, do you? Okay.
I've got it playing. I'm watching it as you're right. They just showed a scene. They're in the, they're looking at something at the bridge, and then he's just looking up and he walks up, but it's like they have a nice soft spotlight on his face.
Yeah, so exactly. Like,
and just the scene, cause you're saying it, I'm watching it. This is the scene here that I'm actually watching. They're actually, they're flooding the forecastle.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Seagal's going to see it up on the monitor, but as he walks up and looks at it, he's going like this and he's walking towards it. The light never changes on his face, to your point. It's like a soft white light going there. So somebody's off camera with a flashlight pointed at his face.
That's hilarious.
Isn't it?
So great. I would love to know the backstory on that. I'm sure Seagal's agent was like, you got to light his face up.
Exactly.
Real quick, if we can rewind,
sure. What do you got?
In the engine room, they go into the engine room and they shoot this guy in the stomach. Kind of a heavy set guy.
Yeah.
That is Joseph Casala.
Okay.
He's in The Fugitive.
The Fugitive.
He's one of the Chicago cops.
Oh,
at the end of the movie, he goes, "You shot a cop. You're going down."
Yeah.
Right? Remember that? That's him. Yep. That's the same guy.
That's him.
Makes me wonder how tight he is with the director Andrew Davis.
Maybe. Yeah. So did he get killed? Is he later on in, is he any more of Under Siege? Or is that it? Does he get shot in the stomach and he lays
there? No, he goes back to, I think he's down in that room that's getting flooded.
He's in. Okay. Well, they actually lock a bunch of people, and we'll get to that scene. There's a huge mistake, the continuity error, when they actually save those guys that were, they weren't in the forecastle. They were in the in a just a different room.
Right.
You know, that they locked. They welded like the door shut.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he was in there. I think they tossed that guy that they shot.
Yeah. So, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. This scene here at 5633, more than a chef. This is that scene that's very much like when this is Steven Seagal. Big giveaway here. So we're in the war room, and they're having, this is when Steven Seagal first calls him on the sat phone. You know, it's like, oh, like a cell phone? He's like, yeah, cell phone. But he's talking to the war room, right? And the, right. But Captain
after he's in that boat.
In the boat.
Like, all lit up, and he's in there like, boop, boop, boop.
Yeah. And he's setting up the satellite thing and everything, and then he sneaks away, and he's like, hey, I got it all set up now. He's got a mobile unit. Yeah, well. Right. So, obviously, we know he's got some kind of training other than being a chef at this point. I don't think they've said it at this point, but the depth of his knowledge and how high-ranking Steven Seagal's character is, Ryback, it's given away here big time, but it's very, very subtle. And he's talking to Captain Garza. Remember the guy? He's in the war room, and he's like, I'll stand up for him. This is a good guy. Sure. And he calls him Chief Ryback, right? Not chef, chief. So, but then he goes, when he introduces himself to Steven Seagal, he goes, hey, this is Captain Ryback here. And he's like, oh, and Seagal replies with, glad you're there, Captain. Meaning, like, I know you, and I'm glad you're there. Like, I'm glad you're in on this, right? That's one giveaway. But this one's huge. He goes, again, it's a little subtle because it happens so quick. They start talking, and Seagal's character gives him the breakdown of what's going on. And then the Captain Garza says, all we want you to do right now is just, you know, keep feeding us intel. And then Steven Seagal interrupts and says, Nick, this may be crazy, but, and then he goes on to explain, call them by his first name.
Yeah.
And when does that happen? When does that happen in the military? One, that he knows his first name. And that in the military, you'd call a superior officer by his first name. Hey, Nick, how you doing, buddy?
Respect.
Yeah.
And by the way, Captain Garza, that guy has been in a ton of, he was in Saving Private Ryan. I mean, he's just another face in this movie where you're like, that guy, right?
Yeah.
Lots of military movies.
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of them, yeah. But yeah, that guy there, he was awesome. But I thought
Dale
that was,
Dye, I think his name is.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, I thought that was really, then he called him Nick. I'm like,
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. It kind of jumped out at me on this viewing. And I was like, holy cow. I'm like, huh. 1 hour and 8 seconds, mineral spirits. And this is when Steven Seagal blows up, booby traps the helicopter with the thing, a lacquer thinner,
right,
and the grenade, goes off. Oh,
how many grenades awesome did he have? Base.
I don't know. He just kept finding them on the floor, I think.
And he knew what to do with them all. It's amazing.
Every single one. This one here, and then the one where he booby trapped the door.
Right.
Both great base. Nice concussive base. And it seemed to, like, it exploded off the screen, and the sound actually moved through the room.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Starts at the front, and then moves to the back of the room, which I thought was really, really cool.
It's your Die Hard moment, too.
Yeah.
He's jumping off, and the explosion.
Yes. You know? Yep, yeah. He jumps off the side, doesn't use a fire hose. Yeah.
Right. Uses,
but he clangs on the side of the ship. Yeah.
For sure.
I didn't pick up on that one, but there you go. Yeah, another Die Hard moment.
Yeah.
All right, this next one at 1 hour, 4 minutes, 30 seconds, and did you pick up on this? So Ryback is, this is where Steven Seagal and Erica Eleniak, they save the people. They unweld the door, and they go in, and they're telling, and you get that one guy that's like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just here for the college plan. And then, but
I don't know. I haven't had a shot of gun and blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yeah. Right. But he, Ryback looks, or Steven Seagal looks at this one guy and he calls him Ranger. I don't think it's his name. I think he just calls him Ranger. And he goes, Ranger, you know, he's like, you take this. And he hands him an Uzi. And Ranger takes the Uzi and he looks at it like this, like,
Weird. Hmm.
And he even looks at like the, it's got the back extended, the, what do you call that?
The little handle flip out.
Yeah.
The
shoulder
yeah.
brace. So he looks at that and he puts it in, but as he goes like this with it, right? What we're missing, what's going on at 1 hour, 4 minutes, 30 seconds. If you can, the first person to tweet or email me what Todd and I just talked about, I edited it out of the podcast, so you can't hear it. But when somebody says it, I'll tweet the video of us talking about the scene after somebody guesses it. But the first person to guess it right, gets the blue. I'll send a Blu-ray copy of Under Siege, and wow. yeah, and I want you to come on the show and tell me about the scene. I'll have you come on the show just like here, and we'll put that video out on YouTube of you describing the scene, your theater, whatever, and we'll just have some fun. But the winner is going to get a Blu-ray copy and get to come on the show and talk about that particular scene and whatever else you want to talk about at the time. Sound cool?
It's a good giveaway.
You can't win, Todd, because you already know.
Do I?
Well, you already have the movie. So, that'll be pretty cool. I'll edit that out and edit that together, but awesome. That'll be fun for people. So hopefully people will take advantage of that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Yeah. So, all right. 1 hour, 8 minutes, 14 seconds, drop anchor. Pretty self-explanatory, but really cool sounding and looking scene.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool way to shoot it. But the sound here from the different points of view, like obviously when it's first dropping, it's coming at the chain is coming at you. That's the most distinct, like you're out on the deck and hearing it go by. But then there's the sound from the prisoners here from inside the forecastle, which is right up at the front. How did it sound on your system? It sounded like it was going over my head and down the left side of my room.
I think in my room, it was more forward.
Okay.
And lower. It was, I did not have that over the top sound, like with the helicopter blades.
Okay.
But it definitely sounded good. Yeah. And I did like how it shifted as they took the shot around the boat. You could definitely hear that, clanking
sound
of that heavy chain.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when it snapped to a stop, it like, that was really, really nice.
Yeah.
That's the fun part of doing this podcast, too. I get to make fun noises like, gung. So ridiculous. All right. 1 hour, 24 minutes, 30 seconds, the different rounds. This is a fun thing to go back. The different sounds that you got when they started firing on the sub, and they shot a 5-inch starburst to start. And
are you skipping over the guns, the cross when Seagal.
No, we don't have to skip it. What about them?
Hilarious.
Is it?
I mean, my son. He's like got his arms crossed with Uzis. Just running down the hallway, just bah, 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 just firing off.
Right. So my son and I actually talked about that while we're watching the movie. And he goes, why is he crossing his arms? And I said, here's my explanation. See, if my son's big into guns. He can name anything, okay. Right? He loves studying them. He loves watching YouTube videos on them. I mean, all of that stuff. He's huge fascination with guns. Knows all the names. And he's an engineer. He wants to design stuff like that. Anyways, he said the same thing. And my explanation was this. You're running down a narrow hall and there's guys on the sides. Going, crossing your arms like this and shooting the guns, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that easier than going like this?
I guess.
You know what I mean? Like, because, like, if you go like this, you're aiming too far forward and you're probably not getting into the doorway. But if you go like this, it just, you just cross. I don't think he did it because it was, and it's stupid. This is in a movie, right? No kidding. But I think he did it more practically just to get inside those doors ahead of you.
Well, he did, and he does turn.
a couple yeah, times to angle it. He's like, bah, 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 bah.
Right. I don't, it didn't seem like he was doing it. Like you hold an arm to brace it. I don't think he was doing that. I think it was more of just to spray the actual sides. Cause it's easier than taking your hands and putting your wrist together. You know what I mean? It's like for people just listening to this podcast, they have no idea what we're talking about, but yeah, it's like that's yeah, it is hokey.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Fun. Nevertheless. Fun. Yeah. And some good sound too, as he's running down that hall. With the bullets ricocheting and everything.
Yeah. There's a ton of that. And that's like I said, I have 25 scenes. I know I miss some because I try to get to, like, I see my things. And if people have different, like you brought this one, that's awesome. And when I do know that scene, he's running down the hall and you can hear it on either side of your room.
Yep.
As he's running down the hall. It's tinny gunfire. Like you said, it's
not as good as what you're about to talk about.
Yes. Right. So, yeah, 1 hour, 24 minutes, 30 seconds, the different rounds. First, the starburst goes off, or the 5-inch starburst, and it sounds good. Mm-hmm. It sounds nice. It's got some deep, but not too deep. But right. It's just a nice shot. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a movie from 1992. All right. And that's why. Then, at 1 hour, 25 minutes, and 15 seconds, they fire a 5-inch shell.
Right.
And this is, this is what blows out Tommy Lee's eardrums and the blood coming down. Right. But wow, the deep bass. Jumping back and forth between these two it's a lot of fun. And if you have, two subs, one sub, four subs,
yep.
it's a huge difference.
It's a good one. Yeah, definitely. And also, by the way, lots of fun to watch Gary Busey running for his life, trying to get down.
Yeah. And well, that's my next scene is where Gary Busey's like, here's the shell coming, the final shell that sinks them.
Right.
And at 1 hour, 26 minutes and 25 seconds, I called it whoops because they screwed up because they took for granted. They're like, oh, they don't have anything. It's just a starburst. Don't worry about it. But then you hear that shell coming in after he saw the first one just miss. But this is another one where you can hear it overhead. Like, you're inside the sub, you're looking at Gary Busey's all red, right. You got the red lights on inside the sub, but you can hear that whooshing overhead. How did it sound in your room?
Good. Really good. Didn't get that direct overhead, but it was enough that you had the sense of it.
Yes.
I'd like to go back and hear that up next, though, to get that flying overhead.
Yeah. Because that's how it felt to me. It felt like I could hear it coming almost from the right side to the left side, like a very subtle. And I think a lot of that is your own brain going like maybe it's going this way. I don't know. It's my memory from right now. But it definitely did sound like you were inside the sub and you heard the whooshing going by. And then the sound of when the sub exploded.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Nice, powerful explosion.
Yeah, another one that moved from front to rear. The explosion comes off the screen. You can hear pieces landing behind you, like in the ocean or whatever, but just great, great full room engagement. Lots of fun. It's a good scene.
Definitely.
1 hour, 28 minutes, 45 seconds, launching the missiles. So Tommy Lee Jones fires on Hawaii. What? What did I miss? Thing.
The most ridiculous point of the entire movie is after they sink the sub, all of a sudden there's like five of them.
Yeah.
They're on the front of the ship. They've got their arms around each other. They're all just hanging out, just watching that sub burn. Like nothing else is going on. Meanwhile, you've got like these spotlights on the ship that are just constantly moving. And then just like, there's like this shot of the five of them, like, they're all like, singing Kumbaya, hanging out. No one's looking around like, is anybody coming to get us?
Right.
The ridiculous factor is off the charts.
Yeah, because Tommy Lee Jones is still there. Yeah. I mean, they've taken care of most of the mercenaries.
But they have no idea, right?
They have no idea how many more.
So they fire these guns off, and then they just go out, and they stand on the deck, and they're all like, yeah, look at that, look at that, yay, we did it.
High five. College plan.
Woo! I know. So funny.
I'm still alive.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt. I just noticed that part. No. That one scene, I was like, okay, that's ridiculous.
Well, there's so much ridiculous in this movie. Let's not, I mean, let's, you know, I mean, but it's, that's what we like. Yeah. I mean, it's, and to be, for a Blu-ray, it's just fun. It is fun. Yeah. And it's like, that's, I was honestly surprised when I was done. I call it stamping out a movie. Like I watch a movie from beginning to end without stopping it. And I have a little stopwatch and I time it and I use my phone and I screen grab the stopwatch.
Oh,
and that's where I know where my timestamps are.
Okay.
So I never have to lose concentration on the movie. I just know that when I get to a part, I go click, I, you know, screen grab the scene, not take a picture of the scene, but screen grab the timestamp.
Okay.
I sync it up when I start the movie. And
okay. I see what you mean.
So I start the movie and then 10 seconds after the movie is started. So at 10 seconds into the movie, I hit stopwatch. I hit the start on the stopwatch on your iPhone, right?
Just take a screenshot of your,
of my phone. So like when you get to the 2-minute and 10-second mark, when he hangs up his phone, right? I hear that and I'm like, oh, that was cool. I pick up my phone and I just hit screen grab and it marks it at like roughly 2 minutes and 10 seconds. It might be off, but then when I go back through, I'll know, what did I see here? And and that jogs my memory. I get there and I see what it is. I thought like the movie I did a couple weeks ago or last week, I did a half hour podcast. It was, what the heck? Oh, They Live.
They Live. Yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyed the movie. It's great. It's actually a better movie, I think, than Under Siege, the movie itself. But it's an 80s kind of bad acting. Doesn't have great special effects or anything, but it's a fun movie. But it only took me a half hour to do the podcast. And then I stamped it out, and I'm like, oh, it had only a few scenes in it. This one I thought would be similar to that because it's an older movie. But wow. I mean, I had 25 scenes when I was done, and I'm like, holy crap, I got a lot to do here. Which is good. Which is good. To me, that's a good and, you know, entertaining experience.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so at 1 hour, 28 minutes, 45 seconds, launching missiles, Tommy Lee Jones fires the cruise missiles on Hawaii, and the sound of the launching is great, but the pans as the different characters on the ship, you hear it going, and it's like just really, really nice pans going off, which I thought were really cool. This is one that I think a nice 4K HDR, when they get that long shot at night of the ship in the dark and the missiles firing off the side.
That would look really good.
Oh, it would look so good. So good.
Yeah, they did a great job with that scene. You know, they also did some shots of the monitors inside the ship.
Yeah.
You know, they have those camera, I don't know, technical terms, but it's always like a grainy camera.
Yeah,
so they can inside the deck, they can see the missile launching off. They did a really nice job of capturing that
moment. What's going on? Yeah. It was really, really cool. This is a hilarious scene. This falls in, you'll like this one. 1 hour, 29 minutes, 52 seconds. The war room finds out that they fired the two cruise missiles at Hawaii. And that one guy in the war room that's super annoying the entire time is like heavy set guy, round face. And he's like, what does this mean?
Right. Oh yeah.
So the camera pans around this round table and it goes around to this one guy that has, I don't know what branch he's with, but he's got like the braided thing off of his shoulder.
Right.
And the camera stops on the side of his face and he goes dead serious. He goes, approximately 1 million people will reach 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit in less than a second. Serious. Like, what does this mean? And then he's like, well, I have the statistics right here. It means that approximately 1 million people will reach 10,000 degrees in less than a second. But he says it dead serious.
Did you catch in that war room how they were getting their updates at the table? This guy would run up with a red folder.
So yeah.
Instead of like getting a text message, right, of instant information.
This is 92,
Instant information was coming perfectly off a printer. Laid out in this folder. So they'd come in and rent it, and they would go like, oh my gosh, guys. So funny.
Well, how about the launch codes to disarm it when you get to the scene?
Yeah.
And they go, they're like, okay, we're going to play this by the numbers. well, how else would you play it, right? And he goes, we're going to give you the codes. And I liked that Erica Eleniak's character had the wax pencil to write on the board.
I know.
And as the numbers comes out, she knows enough, like, I'll write them down so that Steven Seagal can repeat them back. But did you see, to your point of the folder, it's like, okay, where are the numbers? He goes, all right, here are the numbers. And you see him look, and he goes, where? Okay. There they are. And he finds them on the piece of paper. Like, Hawaii's about to get blown up, and they're like, did we highlight this? Does somebody want to highlight this, please?
And Steven Seagal in that moment, too, when he reads those numbers back, he's like, 1, 2, 3, right?
Yeah,
he says it's so slow. And like, it's like, can you go any slower?
It was so great.
So funny.
So great. All right, two scenes left. 1 hour, 33 minutes, and 47 seconds. As ridiculous as the end to this is the knife fight between Tommy Lee Jones and Steven Seagal. Yeah. But it sounded really good. Those knives clanging together, and they actually do move around your screen. I thought that was very, very well done. It actually entertained me even more. And thinking, like, I know Steven Seagal is really good with the martial arts, but seeing Tommy Lee Jones and him go head-to-head like that, I thought they edited it really well. I thought the camera shots were really well done. But that sound of the knives going ting, 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 I thought that was so cool.
All the little cuts, too. You have that sound.
Yes. Yep. And again, that's kind of to the point, of, like, kind of like what we were saying about the ambient sounds and the jump cuts on the phone call and stuff, where you go from one room to the next. Well, you get the tink, 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 but then he stabs him in the leather, and you get the thump, little sound there.
Yep.
He cuts him up the front. That has one sound. He cuts him on the arm, and that has a different sound to it. And you get all these different sounds, but they are, like I said, very subtly moving across the front of your screen back and forth. And it was just a lot of fun to that, again, you watch this with a sound bar in your living room. Okay.
You're not going to get that. Yeah, you're right. It was great sound design. I was still, though, the whole time thinking, why didn't he just shoot him? I mean, he's got this enemy he knows is a lethal weapon, right?
This
Navy SEAL guy who's a total badass. Why didn't he just come in the room and go, boom?
Right. Well, when Tommy Lee Jones first comes up behind Steven Seagal, and he's got the gun to his head, and he comes, and it's like, oh no, well, this is where we have to have the whole bad guy part,
right?
Where the bad guy explains the entire story to you, because to your point, and you know what's so funny, I'm watching it right now, Tommy Lee Jones on my screen just appeared. But what I did like about that scene was when he came to a pole in the room, he reacted correctly. Like, he had to take the gun. He had to move his arm up and then put it down really fast. Oh. So remember when he's coming through the room and there's poles in the room and he's got his gun trained on Steven Seagal, but the pole's in the way of his forearm. Mm-hmm. So he would come across the room and go really fast.
Okay.
And it was really cool. But to your point, should have just shot him, because I don't know if I know this from, the audio commentary back in the 90s, watching the laser discs or whatever, but they know the reason he is on this ship is because of Tommy Lee Jones's character. That's part of the backstory. Remember they say earlier that Steven Seagal lost his SEAL team in, what was it, Cambodia or something like that?
Yeah.
From bad intelligence. Well, the intelligence was gathered by Tommy Lee Jones. That's what he does. And one of his things he knew. So that's why in this scene here, they say they know each other. There's a whole backstory to these two characters. And that's another reason why he doesn't just kill them, is because he does know, they know each other and they don't like each other. And he holds it. I'm saying he, cause I'm watching Steven Seagal talk to him now on the screen, but Steven Seagal's character actually, you know, hates him because that's how he lost his SEAL team.
And Tommy Lee Jones does say, like, now you're going to be forced to watch all these people die, right? It's like, I'm going to make you pay and suffer, right?
Right, exactly.
And but still, he should have just...
Yeah, I want to say I even heard that the commanding officer that Steven Seagal hit to get himself demoted to a chef, I want to say it was either Tommy Lee Jones or the other guy in the room, Tom, the guy that the head of intelligence. Yeah. So he hit one of them, and that's what got him demoted and put, you know, and that's why he's serving out his time on the ship as a chef. Got it.
Okay.
So there's a whole backstory there that was really cool. I'll have to maybe find the audio commentary or something and listen to that again.
Yeah.
The last cool scene, 1 hour, 36 minutes, 23 seconds, cruise missile, full room engagement. You're on the back of the cruise missile here, and it's coming down. And this is one where my son was like, why is it skirting the coast? Why does it just go up and over the landing? You know, like, because it went straight at Hawaii. Yeah, exactly. It's like, because it's a movie and you want to take a tour of the beaches? I don't know. But nice sound of being on the back of that cruise missile, like full room engagement there.
Yeah.
But then when it explodes, you get the explosion and that on the middle of the screen, nice explosion, not like when we were firing the 5-inch guns. But then it splashes down and pieces land, and there's dead silence after that, which like really emphasizes all the sound that we were just dealing with, being on the back of the cruise missile and then the explosion and everything. But then it's over.
Now, why did it explode? I couldn't figure that out. I mean, I know they
self-destruct.
Right. I thought it would just kind of like go off course and die into the water. It
just splash into the water. Yeah.
Why the little. I mean, it was just a
and then there's a parachute explosion. Comes out of it.
Yeah, what was that?
That's what my son said. He goes, "What's a parachute? Well, they have a little Martian in there flying it."
Like that was a nuclear warhead.
Armed. Yeah, I don't know if that was one of the Tomahawks because I thought they offloaded all of those. Maybe not. I don't know, but I know it's a cruise missile.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And it had a nuclear warhead. You would figure they wouldn't blow up something that has a nuclear warhead. They would just splash it down,
right.
Disarm it. Anyway.
Yeah. No, but he does explain it because you have Erica Elenick, Miss July, says, won't the nukes go off? And whatever she said. And the way she says it, it looked painful. Like she just had a hard time getting that line out. And then Steve said, no, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
He's like, they'll just sink with the rest of it. Okay. Oh, and yeah, and there goes the parachute. I don't know. Maybe that's the black box inside it. I don't know.
I just saw it
explode. The warhead. Yeah. Yeah, sink. Yeah. So we can find it easier. So definitely, I recommend the movie. As I said earlier, I'm giving a copy away. So I can't say enough about it. I just had so much fun with this. You and I talked about this months and months ago.
Yeah.
I could not wait to do this. It was killing me over the last few months to not sit down and watch it. I wanted my son to see it too. He'd never seen it.
Uh-huh.
So I was really looking forward to that. But yeah, it's so much fun.
It's definitely worth watching for sure.
Yeah.
For me, this is like a good Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Know. It's raining outside, throw on this and just sit back and take yourself back in time.
Leave your brain slightly outside the door.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, Seagal's not making movies anymore.
No.
Right.
And, they don't really make these kind of movies anymore like this. And it's just cheesy, fun. Just, it's, I had a lot of fun with it. I was hoping, let's talk about the Kaleidoscape a little bit.
Sure.
Did you already have it or did you buy it for this or did you rent
bought it?
Bought it. Oh, you bought it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cause I went online and looked, at disc. I couldn't remember the cost of the disc, but it was enough. I think on, Kaleidoscape, it was like $14.
Yeah, it is. $14.99. Yeah.
Yep.
So there you go. It's even cheaper there. So I'm hoping to be getting a Kaleidoscape soon, working it out with the wife. We got a little negotiation going on.
You definitely got to do it.
I know.
Especially for someone like you who loves movies so much.
For me, it's like, so here's a good, let me ask you this. My buddy, he loves movies like me, my buddy John. He's thinking about it, but he doesn't watch movies like I do, right? He'll watch a movie a week maybe, but I like to jump from movies and scenes. That's the ballpark that the Kaleidoscape is meant for. To me, that's how I recommend it. Because if you're just watching a couple of movies a week and you don't mind getting up and putting your disc in, then you would never really understand the benefit of a kaleidoscape in that aspect. I mean, there's other benefits to a kaleidoscape, being if you have a high-end theater that's, you know, you have masking, manual or whatever you call it. Yeah, automatic masking.
Oh, sorry. So locked into there's home so much automation. Stuff. You know, they just inked a deal with a company called Cinique.
Cinique, the seat.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, so it will.
Gorgeous.
Recline your seat as the movie starts. So they
come on.
Yeah, so they basically will mark the movie.
Right. The movies are all marked for lights to come on. Yeah. And so now it'll trigger your seat.
Yes, to go back and recline, and then at the end it'll come back into its upright position. Really cool. I mean,
see, I don't think I can live long enough to get to the point where I could afford something
I mean, that's, you're talking about insane amounts of money for the seating and the, but it's neat that it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I've always loved stuff like that. Like, even going back to early kaleidoscape days of, like, back in the early 2000s when I was talking with Brett about it, and I'm like, I've known about this company since its, you know, outset, and their systems were $35,000-$40,000. Never would have, I couldn't touch that. Never even dreamed of touching it. But I still loved that stuff. I would never look at stuff like that and go, ah, that's ridiculous. I'm like, no, hey, it's something to aspire to, or try to duplicate it on your own in another way. And other people have. They've tried it. That's why we have the, you know, we have Plex, we have Zapedi, I have a Zapedi, and it's like, there's other ways to do it. But that kaleidoscape, it's just, and now it is actually coming down. So hopefully I can get there.
Yeah. Plus being able to just buy a copy of a movie and have it quickly.
Yeah. You have the Terra system, right?
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
So you have it in like 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Just boom. There it is.
So nice.
Yeah. It's so cool. Nice. Yeah. You get, that's definitely got to be, that and Oro have got to be. Just to play around with it.
Yeah.
The Oro, the upmixing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to try that. I'll definitely try that. I got to find a way. I got to download it and update my Denon. But it can do it. I know the update's out there, so check that out.
Yeah.
But all right.
Yeah, fun. By the way, the ending of the movie.
Yeah.
Where, I forget, what does Seagal say? He's like, I'll show you my move or something like that.
Oh, and he kisses Erica Galaniak.
It's so cheesy. Everyone's like, whoa! You know, it's the way they're filming that, you could tell it's like the end and everybody's coming up and kind of meeting Seagal. Yeah,
it's almost like a reshoot. like the after party.
I know, it's hilarious.
Let's film the after party. How about, are you Navy or Air Force?
Air Force.
You grew up. Air Force. Okay. Air Force. So, my son noticed it and he was like, why is she in a uniform at the funeral?
I know.
And she's got the little tie on. I was like, I don't know. Is that still left over from her costume coming out of the cake?
It's so ridiculous.
I thought that was, it was funny. I didn't really care about it. My son thought it was weird, but I didn't know if like any military people would be like, yeah, that's just wrong.
I mean, there's so many moments in that movie where you're like, huh? Like when Seagal covers the ship commander or captain up, you know, he finds him dead on the floor.
Oh, finds him dead and covers him with his coat,
his jacket, and in that moment, that's not what you're doing.
Yeah,
you're like, who's in here? You know, got to protect myself. I got to identify targets or whatever.
He's Steven Seagal. He's a Navy SEAL. He already did all that.
So how does this stack up to Under Siege 2? Have you watched that recently?
Yeah. Under Siege 2, I haven't like watched it for its home theater part, but Under Siege 2, I always, this one's better. Under Siege 2 is kind of the same. They're on a train in that one.
I've seen it, but many, many years ago.
Yeah. The scene from that one is when the girl, I think it was a girl, tries to pepper spray the bad guy, the main bad guy, who's the equal to Steven Seagal. Okay. They're both SEALs. I think they even know each other, if I remember right. But the girl pepper sprays him. He just goes like this. He goes, eh. Like he likes it. Like he's like, yeah, that stuff doesn't bother me because they're trained to have it, you know, to not be affected by pepper spray.
Right.
It's like, so.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's wicked. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe someday I'll get back. I don't actually own that one, but maybe someday I'll get back into it.
I'm curious to check it out just to see, you know, if it has a similar replay value to Under Siege or not.
Yeah.
I did check out the box office takings for Under Siege. $150 million worldwide.
That's not bad. Not, what did it cost to make?
Well, I didn't look at that. No.
Yeah.
And on its opening weekend, it made $15 million, which is equivalent to about $30
million. Oh, wow.
This day and age. So not
Seagal
terrible.
Was big. Seagal yeah. was big. So it's not like people were like, you know, didn't care. I mean, this was maybe his third or fourth big movie, I think, after Above the Law and all the stuff that he did. I can't even remember all of them because they did start to get cheesy. But I always enjoyed them. I had a lot of fun with them. He's kind of like, what would you call Seagal? Like him, Van Damme. They're kind of like the B list when you have like Action. Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis. It's funny, Bruce Willis, that's how big Die Hard was, is that you took a guy, that normal size guy, and he becomes an action star, not the He-Man bulked up Dolph, a Dolph Lundgren size or Arnold Schwarzenegger size. He turned it into the everyman, which is what Steven Seagal ended up being. He wasn't even like, he's not cut up.
No,
he's just an average.
He's
average.
Very slick looking though. You know, yes. He's always like, he's always got that tan look and the, they always make him look very clean.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. But he's like, if you notice, like his shoulders, they're not cut. Like when he's wearing a tank top, but he's not cut. You don't see that nice round shoulder that you would normally expect.
It's like
in a
fatty
movie.
Arm almost.
Yeah. You know? He's just a normal guy, right. Which you don't have the gratuitous ab shot that you would get, you know, that he was just that normal guys like myself. I'd be like, I could get in a slap fight. That's me.
Him running though, there weren't any really great running scenes. There were a couple.
Not on a battleship.
There was a couple where he ran and he's like, tick, 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 tick. It's just
him and Tom Cruise in a race. Oh, hysterical.
That I'd like to see.
You know what I would like? You know what would be even funnier? Them in a relay race and watching the two of them try to run and hand a baton to each other. I don't think they could pull it off because they're just good. Tom Cruise's arms are out to the side, and it's just, I mean, even he knows. Tom Cruise jokes about it. It's like,
he has that very upright too, right? Tom Cruise.
Yeah, his shoulders go behind. Yeah, because I did a lot of running too for racing, and it's like, it's funny, like, your shoulders, if you want to run faster, try to put your shoulders out in front of you. And it's like, because running is basically falling, but you're catching yourself with each step.
Right.
But Tom Cruise, the exact opposite. It's like he's running like in a recliner.
It's so funny.
It's so wrong. Greatest
back in the world. Yeah.
Right. But the movie portrays him going really fast. It's like,
so funny.
Yeah, it is. I was trying to, let me see, what do we got for box office? You said box office. I'm trying to see if I can find the budget. Ah. Oh, let's see. Budget. $35 million. Estimated $35 million budget, which that's not bad. Wow. If it made 150.
I'm actually surprised.
That it was that high?
That
No. I mean, not a lot, obviously not a lot spent on makeup. We didn't even talk about that. The scene when Tommy Lee Jones gets the knife in the eye.
Oh, so bad.
That was like Terminator when, remember the head of Arnold when he get, and it's like, you could tell it's just a fake head. And it was, I think it actually was Arnold's head that they used in Under Siege. It was that bad.
It was bad. Yeah, it was bad. And then he just smashes his face through the radar screen that's like plate glass.
Right. Yeah, he just puts his head in there because, like, we don't want anybody to see that because it just looks so bad. We just throw him off to the side.
Right.
Yeah. But still fun.
Yeah.
I can't say
it's a fun movie.
Enough.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it's You know, I always gauge it by, did I fall asleep? No, I did not fall asleep during that movie.
That's a good start. That's a good barometer. So how would you give this? Well, I lasted 45 minutes. Oh, all right. So the first 45 minutes, first 40, you're okay. Then you start to fall asleep. But yeah, no, yeah. I didn't fall asleep at all. Lots to take in. I mean, obviously we went over all the scenes I found, the scenes you found, and like, or that jumped out to us anyways. And yeah. it is a lot of fun. What's the next movie you would like to talk about? And I'm going to get you the notes next time ahead of time so that you actually know. But what's a great movie you'd like to talk about?
Oh boy.
We came up with Under Siege organically, just us talking about Iron Eagle.
Yeah, boy, and that Under Siege is just such a random.
Right.
Are you talking like random movies or not random?
Yeah, just one of your favorite movies that you'd like that you think is a great home theater experience. Maybe that I haven't. What do you got that maybe I haven't broken down?
Have you broken down Hannah?
I haven't broken down Hannah yet, I don't think. I don't think I did. No, I didn't. Did I? But yeah, we could do that if I haven't done that one yet.
I like that movie.
Yeah, it is. It's a good movie.
It's a really, really good movie.
It'll be funny if I did break it down already for me to be like, I've been doing this over 2 years. And it's like, I'm like, oh, I can't remember if it was Hannah. Because there's a few female-led characters like that, that it's just their name. I can't remember if I did that one or I did another one. Not Peppermint.
There was who was the, was it Atomic Blonde? Right.
Yeah. Yep. Atomic Blonde. I broke that one down. I loved that movie. I really enjoyed that movie. John Goodman. I thought he was really good. But yeah, Charlize Theron. I love that movie.
Yeah.
That's a great movie for HDR. You got the neon. You got such a good movie. And the Atmos in that is so good. If it's that, it might be DTSX. I can't remember.
I think it's definitely.
I definitely broke that one down.
Yeah, that's a sweet looking flick.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. 80s era. Did you hear that they're trying to, I've heard rumors that they want to cross that over with John Wick because she's basically John Wick. It's a basically John Wick movie, a female John Wick. And I heard people saying that they wanted to cross that over and do like a movie with the two of them, that the two of them wanted to do it. But I'm like, yeah, but she's going to be 30 years older because that movie took place in the 80s when the wall was coming down, right?
Right.
What, 89 or whatever?
It wouldn't make any sense.
It wouldn't make sense. Like, you'd have to age her or put him, I don't know, but yeah.
Have you broken down John Wick or John Wick 2?
I don't know. I don't think so.
John Wick 2 would be a good one to do.
Yeah.
I've clipped several of those scenes from that movie for demo purposes. They are just very dynamic.
See, that would be fun. You know, the next movie we should do, hopefully I'll have a Kaleidoscape by the next time and we can both watch a movie and set and share files.
Yeah.
Cause I was thinking, I said, we've been talking about this since what, September or whatever, when you and I talked and we were like, we'll do this at the beginning of the year. And I'm like, all the while I was thinking that would be cool if I could get a Kaleidoscape by then. And, it, you know, with the holidays, I just couldn't pull it off. But yeah, to be able to watch it, stamp it, and then send you
and then
the files,
share the scenes.
Yeah, it'd be like you and I could actually see what I see the scenes I'm talking about, and vice versa. That would be kind of fun. That would be a fun experiment.
Awesome.
So we'll have to do that on the next movie. Hopefully, I'll have a Kaleidoscape by the next time you're on, and we'll have to share files. That would be a lot of fun. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be great.
Cool. All right. That should do it. We've been going for a little while now, Todd.
We have. 2 hours, 9 minutes, to be exact.
2 hours, 9 minutes, 40 seconds?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to edit some out of here because we have that scene that I had to cut out for people. Right. So hopefully.
Yeah, good luck to whoever wins that. You're going to enjoy it.
That would be cool. What exciting do you have coming up at AV Nirvana?
Review-wise?
Yeah, you got that the baby brother to the Yamaha.
Yep, got the baby brother. Then I have a Pioneer LX305 receiver.
Oh, where's that fall in the lineup? Flagship or midline?
Midline.
Okay.
That actually might be their bottom I have to check.
Oh, entry level?
Entry cool. level. But it's, it was released last year. You know, I don't know. I have it. It's sitting in a box back in my workshop.
There you go.
And they've been asking me, when are you going to do it? So it's coming up. That's coming up. I've got a huge sub sitting over here from DefTech.
Oh.
That I have to unbox and deploy. So that is coming up. Storm Audio ISP Core 16 is coming up. That's their new entry-level
processor.
Processor, which should be a lot of fun to play around with. It has a new color screen on it. The difference between that and their ISP 2432 that I have is that it's not really upgradable. The one that I have, basically, as they upgrade componentry, you can just buy it and install it into what you have.
Oh, okay.
ISP 16 doesn't really have that option.
Yeah, it's like you'd have to get a whole new receiver. Unit.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, basically. With the exception of a few parts, they said they would be upgrading on that. But for the most part, they brought the cost way down to make it more accessible.
To get people into the market, and then maybe so somebody like myself be like, hey, I'll try it out, and then if I like it, you know, throw it on eBay, upgrade to something like you have, and then you're off and running into that. You're obviously more money, it's more of an investment, but from the sounds of what you're saying, is it's literally an investment because you buy the unit and then you can upgrade at a cheaper price in the future,
right? Yeah, and Storm Audio, I mean, you mentioned Trenov, they are really, really sweet pieces of gear. I think you can hear the difference.
Really?
Between I think so.
That and a receiver?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, so it's basic. Just so clean. And as you advance volume, the noise floor is like non-existent. And the processing power of these things are just, you know, they're just finely tuned machines.
Right.
But not to take away from these amazing AVRs, because they are also incredible.
Right. You know what I notice about, so in video, so the reason I ended up with Illumigen is because I saw flaws, right? You see flaws and you want to correct those. And you're like, okay, I know I can do better here. I can do better. So you start to upgrade, whether it's a TV, you have a cheaper display, you see, I think I can make that crisper. I can make that better.
Yeah.
You see that. Audio, when you don't know until you get to that next level, because my room, like you said, like AVRs, there is nothing wrong with them. You can't hear anything wrong with them. It's
unless
literally
underpowered.
Like,
I mean, what's that? If it's underpowered, you can hear it.
Yeah, if you're
you'll
trying
get the distortion
to if you're trying to push it past its limits, but if you're just running like my system here, it's not running past its limits. There's more than enough power in the receiver to run my speakers. I would say, like, to me, I'm like, how can that be better? But what, like you said, with the noise floor, that's what you're getting rid of. That's the improvement. Maybe the sound might actually coming out might be the same. And I mean, this is very ignorant talk, but it's the absence. It's cleaning that sound the difference.
Cleaner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, there's different levels of processors. I can't say never, but for the most part, it's almost impossible to hear the difference between DACs. Like, if you did a blind test between various receivers, it would have to be a really crappy receiver to hear the difference, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know. And Trenov is the same. Trenov is just an amazing piece of gear.
They have
their own room correction. Storm Audio uses Dirac.
Okay.
Which makes a difference also. I mean, Dirac is really good. And like the unit that I have has the bass module.
Yeah.
And it manages four subs independently. It's not one channel split. It's four independent channels.
Yeah.
So there's those little things that when you start to fine tune, you do get a cleaner, punchier, more dynamic sound.
Yeah.
But just like that Yamaha that I was reviewing over the last month, that thing can kick it.
Yeah.
Really, really well. And somebody mentioned on the review, one of the comments, you know, how does it compare to Dirac? Like,
yeah.
I can almost guarantee you that if you walked into the room and sat down, you wouldn't go, well, this doesn't have Dirac. I can hear it. I mean,
yeah,
no way. No way. No. You would sit down and say, wow, this is amazing.
Right. I think the difference is, like, and my buddy went through this accidentally. When you get into your room correction stuff, like, out of the box, these receivers, they sound really good, right?
Mm, they do.
If I got in my car and I drive to your house and I watch a movie, I'm going to be like, wow, that sounds really good. Let me take this exact receiver, go home and listen to it in my house. Mm-hmm. It'll sound really good. But maybe in your house, you had the room correction on, and maybe in my house, I didn't. And you would never know the difference between the two.
Right.
When you hear the difference is when in your room and you go from room correction to no room correction. That's when you, and it's a substantial difference. You can hear it. I'm not saying it's a huge difference, but it's noticeable.
Yep.
And there is an improvement there, but you need to do it really quick. You need to be, or have listened to a bunch of content. And my buddy, he was using the Odyssey EQ, and he kept doing it one on his, I think I told you about this one, and he never uploaded it.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
Right? So he kept doing it, and he did a bunch of room corrections, and he had all these things, and here's where it plays with your mind, and not to make fun of him, because both, I know he listens to the podcast too, but we both have talked about this, and it's like, when you do something, you're like, yeah, I hear the difference. That's better. Mm-hmm. And nothing was better. It's like drinking a non-alcoholic beer and getting drunk, right? Yeah. Nothing was better. It was playing with his head. But then after a while, and actually he found out you have to upload it. And I'm saying like a year. He listened to all this content. After a year, he found out that you have to upload the
from the app
correction
the receiver,
from
right.
the app. Yep. When he did it, he heard the difference. He was like, oh my God, it's a huge difference, right? His room got corrected. And he's not in a dedicated theater. He's in a living room where correction really helps, right? Mm-hmm. So he's like, he thought he had fantastic sound before, but that, as painful as that is to go through, it's also, like he said, a lot of fun because now all your movies are brand new again.
Right.
Right? And it's like, but that's the stuff, like you were saying, like, your system, Storm Audio, awesome stuff. But I watch a scene at your house. I come over here and I watch a scene at my house. Unless we set up the two systems here, that's when you're going to A/B, and that's when you're going to be able to be like, oh my God, that is better. But
maybe you might notice, I mean, the biggest thing that I notice in systems, various systems, is the low end. You know,
the bass management.
Yeah. If bass is out of control or muddy or too loose, or if the subs just suck and they're bottoming out.
Yeah.
You're going to pick up on that really fast. Or if something's overly bright, you know,
like Under Siege was a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the content, you know, I think the bass, it can actually, like, if you're not managing it well, whether it's room correction actual or room management, like sound absorption in your room.
Yeah.
It's like, and I've had people say this to me, and you hear them on AV Rant. They'll, you know, you do the nice room treatments and it's like, my center channel got better. Well, yeah. Cause you're not fighting all that muddy bass that's bouncing around in your room. You managed it better, you know? So it cleans up your highs. It cleans up the dialogue. It cleans up all of this stuff because you managed your bass better, whether it's with room correction or actually treating your room correctly.
Right.
Huge.
Which
difference.
Is really what your first step should be doing that.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, the room correction is the last step.
Which is funny because if you treat your room correctly, the room correction is a minor upgrade. Most of it, it's already done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's really true.
You know,
yeah. So not everybody has the luxury though of deploying treatments all around their room. I mean, you have a dedicated room,
right?
I have a dedicated room, so you can put whatever you want into it.
Yeah.
If you're
That whole back
room,
wall behind me right now, that whole back wall, that's 6 inches of insulation with acoustically transparent cloth over it.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
So it's just, wow.
Just poof, everything goes back there and dies. So it, you know, and that, I mean, you have the, obviously you see the shelves and stuff back there, the knickknacks and everything.
You get some reflections off those, which is good. Yeah,
to bounce some sound around, but but most of your bass that's going to go right boom and just die right back there.
I have something very similar behind me. It's different. It's a binary slat diffuser that I created with the help of this guy in Bosnia, of all places. But it's basically a giant, it's like 8 or 9 feet wide, 6 feet tall with absorption. And then there are randomly placed wooden slats in front of it, that diffuse sound. So that's the binary part. I generated a spreadsheet, ones and zeros randomly, and that came out. And that's how I organized the slats of this. And it's right behind my seating because my seating is a little close to the wall.
Yep.
And I was getting some bad reflection off the wall. So this hangs in front of my wall.
Yeah.
Very similar to what you have, though, right there. You get some absorption, some diffusion, keeps your room lively, but, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And doing that 6 inches back there, that was probably one of the biggest sound improvements that you can do for, you know, and it's just really, you almost like double stud your wall, like take two studs. That's what I ended up doing. Mm. I pulled down the wall that I had up there. I double studded sideways the long way, you know, and then just stuffed it with insulation and then boop. And it's
that's cool.
Cheap, yeah. You know, and it's like, and the acoustically transparent black cloth I use, just buy big sheets of it. I put them on the frame because it's literally, I framed the wall twice. I framed it once and then stuffed the stuffing and then framed it again, put on the and just popped it up there. And it's awesome. Huh. Great improvement.
Yeah, definitely. Anybody listening to this that has not gone down that road, that is a great road to go down.
Yeah. Takes time, though. It definitely takes time. It's like, and it's fun to get there because it's like, what can I do next to improve my room? Yeah. You know, and it's like, then you start doing stuff like that and you will hear a difference. It's huge.
Yeah. And if you're lost, go to like a website like GIK Acoustics. They manufacture room treatments. They'll give you free advice. You can upload images of your room layout. They're really good folks. I've had a relationship with them for many years.
Have you?
Yeah, they've sent some stuff for reviews, and they've advertised on our website.
Cool.
And it's a family-run business. They're down in Atlanta, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Just really good folks.
Tom and Rob at AV Rant talk about them all the time. They always push people there because people write into AV Rant for, you know, advice on all this stuff, right? And they're always talking room treatments. Like somebody will write in and be like, what's my next speaker upgrade? And they're like, have you treated your room yet? Yeah. And they always go there and they go to GIK. They call it GIK Acoustics and they always send them there and they rave about them as well. So I've never used it. I make my own stuff. It's like,
They sell supplies to make your
kits.
Own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can buy kits, the 703, the 705. Yep. You can buy the frames. And they'll give you advice on how to deploy it.
Yeah.
So, because it's not really something you want to just guess at. I mean, you can do that way and just do your reflection points using mirrors and things like that. But if you want to get some expert advice, those folks are really good.
Cool. Yeah. All right. That good, Todd?
That's good.
My voice, I almost lost it there in the middle. Hey,
you threw this whole tumbler of water.
There you go. Your t-shirt, is that Black Rifle Coffee?
It is.
Look at that.
Yeah.
My son watches, who's the guy there that does all the guns and everything on YouTube? And he had on a Black Rifle t-shirt as well. I know Rogan talks about Black Rifle Coffee and... It was so fun. I mean, like I said, my son's into the guns and everything, but Black Rifle Coffee.
Yeah, I picked up I follow this guy named Jocko Willink.
Oh, I love Jocko.
Yeah, Jocko is awesome. And he was talking about Black Rifle one day and I went on there and bought some. And
love Jocko. Yeah, love Jocko. It's what's his video that you play in the morning? You know his saying? When it's not just do it, it's
good.
Yeah. You broke your leg.
Good.
Yeah. Good. because now you're going to be stronger. You'll figure out how to get around it. Oh, I love that video.
He's got got an album on Spotify.
Okay,
psychological warfare. Because I like to get up. I get up at like 4:30 in the morning and hit the gym.
Like him, yeah.
Like him, but not because of him. Mine is because of other reasons. My kids, life. Early mornings, and life. Yep. But he's got this thing where you turn it on and he's like, "Don't hit the snooze button.
No,
don't do it. Get up. You know."
Yeah,
it's great.
I went through. We were coming down off a mountain, and my son, and myself, and my brother-in-law, we'd done a 3-day hike. And we were banged up. And I was like, this is Jocko Willink. This is Jocko Willink time. It's like my brother-in-law had fallen, sprained his wrist. My knees were shot because I overpacked. I was carrying a 50-pound pack for all 3 days. And overpacked. And I'm coming down. And I'm like, all I kept saying, and I told the story to my brother-in-law, I'm like, you don't know who Jocko Willink is. But when you get home, Google it. And it's like, and I started telling him, and it got us like a good hour of talk on a trail when you're miserable coming down off a mountain after 3 days. And you're like, I'm like, it's like your knees are bothering you. Good. Because you'll learn how to pack better next time. And we're like going around, we're slipping on ice and stuff. You slip slide. Oh, you sprained your wrist. Good. You'll learn next time. And it was like, but that's Jocko. And I love that stuff. That getting up in the morning, good. It's a great attitude.
It is. Him and David Goggins is another. Mm-hmm. Have you ever followed that guy, the crazy ultra marathoner?
Yeah.
He's another guy, you know. Mm.
It's
very inspirational stuff to listen to. Their stuff, and Jocko's podcast, and I love listening to him interview folks. I mean,
he's great. He's
really good.
Yeah. Navy SEAL. This is like, I mean, Rogan's always joking about him. Like, you should run for president. He's like, and he doesn't even shoot it down.
No,
that would be scary.
I know. Well, he's the guy you want to go to battle with.
Oh, yeah, that's who you want go battle for you. I don't want to go with him.
Yeah. I mean, but if you were going to be somewhere in a pinch, you'd want to look over and see that guy.
That's that guy. Yeah.
That guy sitting there with you.
Awesome guy.
Yeah.
I think if they made a movie about him, I think like, Jason Momoa. Don't you think Jason Momoa could play him?
Yeah. He's that big.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I mean, you would not, you talk about,
which is weird for a SEAL. SEALs aren't usually that big. SEALs are like normal looking people. They're they're very smart, very, you know, conditioned. They know their stuff, but yeah, Jocko's got it all.
He was born to do what he did.
What he does. Yeah.
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 And what he does. Yeah. Yeah. Very good
stuff. Yeah. And it's funny too, because he looks like the stereotypical SEAL. Like, people think SEAL and you think big badass, when in actuality, and I've heard this, but you remember the movie Navy SEALs?
Oh yeah.
With Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen. Yeah.
And I remember when that came out, and there were SEALs that were actually saying at that time, like, this is an accurate depiction, because they didn't go for the, you know, the Jason Momoa look. They went, every guy on that team, and what I heard SEALs saying about it was, it's because they're just normal guys. And they portrayed their intelligence, too. Because Navy SEALs are super smart.
Yeah.
Most of their training is being able to handle everything and still be smart. And not panic, right?
Right.
And it's, like, that's the thing about Jocko. He's, it doesn't mean there aren't SEALs as big as Jocko, but it's obviously, but most of them are just normal looking guys.
Guy's a tank.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's a great place to wrap this up.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Todd, where can they find you and follow you, and obviously go to your blogging pages and stuff like that?
Yep. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at AVWoofer. And you can email me, todd@avnirvana.com. And, of course, my website, avnirvana.com. Come on over.
Yep. Great blogs over there. They do movie. Mike's doing great movie reviews.
Yep.
Good stuff. Going to get Michael him Scott. On soon.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome guy.
Going to get him on. We're going to have some fun. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Wow, that was a lot of fun. Thanks to Todd from AV Nirvana for joining me. We had so much fun. Tangents galore. Ended the entire thing talking about Jocko Willink, as you just heard. But if you guys enjoyed that, please follow me along on Twitter at BrightsideHT. You can email me at BrightsideHomeTheater@gmail.com. And if you're watching this on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. Really appreciate that. Questions, comments, send them to me. We'll talk about it on Tuesday on my audio-only podcast where the listeners take over and all I do is talk about your questions, comments, critiques. How could I do this better? God knows I can improve. All of that, plus you can support me on Patreon at patreon.com/brightsidehometheater. Thank you to all my Patreon supporters. That'll do it for this week. I'll be back on Tuesday. Next week, we'll have another video, but until then, go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey, Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.